Good evening. Good evening. I'd like to call a public hearing to order.
Come to order.
I'd like to call a public hearing to order, but maybe, is my microphone on? Hello? All right, I'd like to announce, open the public hearing tonight. I would like to open the public hearing tonight for discussion of Local Law B of 2019, best value purchasing. Is anyone here to speak about that issue? No one here to speak on that issue. I'll close the public hearing and open the April 2nd, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Could you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Dawson?
Je suis ici.
Mr. Granison?
I'm here.
Mr. John has asked to be excused. Ms. Kellis?
I'm here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
I am here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be arriving later this evening. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
12 members present.
Thank you. I would like to reorder things a little bit tonight. Before the presentation on Tioga Street, I'd like to do the consent agenda and maybe the public safety that I think Mr. Robinson is waiting for. To take care of things that staff might be waiting for, who might not necessarily be enthralled with Jason's lengthy debate on the Tioga Street property. So, presentation. Okay. And I'd also like to ask for an executive session at the end of the meeting to discuss a personnel issue related to a particular employee and to discuss real estate negotiations. With that, I have a few members of the public who have signed up to speak. By signing a blue form, you agree to the following. I agree to a 3-minute time limit. Notice our elegant new video screen over there that will show the time. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and I'm asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. And if anybody else would like to sign up, the forms are on the back table. First, I have Yvonne Dawson, and then Faye Gugakis.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Dawson, used to be Yvonne Bartlett. I worked at the Big Zay building, as everyone is aware. I'm currently homeless. As of tomorrow, I think the red code or whatever it's called, blue code, ends for the shelter, and those people that are homeless will be out on the streets. I've been offered to stay in a motel if I give the county $637 of my $870 a month. But out of my $870 a month, I have to pay medical expenses that are not covered under Medicaid. I have to pay my car insurance. I absolutely have to have a phone. And I just have no way of paying $637 a month to the county and staying in a motel. So it looks like I'm going to be in my car. My things that are at the motel, my air purifiers and things, are all going to be in storage. I had asked the county to help me before, and I received a letter from the county administrator, Joe. Marine, or you guys can correct me. I don't know how to say his last name.
Mariana.
Thank you. Thank you. And in that letter he wrote, I am sure you are aware that this matter was raised in a lawsuit over 20 years ago, fully investigated and ultimately dismissed by the courts, given that I don't think it would be appropriate or lawful to now provide assistance on the basis of that claim. If there was a lawsuit for us getting sick at the Big Zay building because of poor indoor air quality, and even one of the board of reps stood up at a meeting probably a year and a half ago and thanked me for coming forward, stating that the Big Zay was indeed a sick building, which was all covered up when we applied for our workers' comp and all that. There was so much information that was covered up and hid by the county that it made it impossible for us to get our workers' comp. But anyhow, the only lawsuit that I am aware of is an ADA case that I brought against the county for accommodations to return to my work, which I did. I returned there for almost a year. One of the guys who had been was a new guy that the county hired after we all got sick came down to my office where I was being accommodated and asked me what doctors I was seeing because he was feeling the symptoms of being in a bad building. And when I told him and the county found out about it, they brought in all these NCR forms to me into this clean air space where I was, which ended up in me going to the emergency room, having an intestinal bleed, and being admitted to the hospital. And that was the last time I worked for the county. My doctors would never release me to go back to that clean workspace because they said that the county was failing to accommodate me by not keeping those NCR forms out of my workplace. But that's the only lawsuit that I'm aware of, and that wasn't based on us getting sick in the building. That was based on us being disabled and asking for accommodations to return back to our work. We never received our workers' comp
or
anything
else.
Thank you,
Ms. Dawson. The time is up. Thank you. Is there not an audio sound? All right, well, we've figured this out. Faye Gugakis and then Ashley Miller.
Faye Gugakis, City of Ithaca. I've been coming here now for a year complaining about the Lyme bikes. Nobody is doing anything about it. Nobody from the city, not the mayor, not the county. You have promoted the Lyme bikes for tourism. You yourself, Martha, was pictured in the Ithaca Times riding the Lyme bike. Okay? Last week's Ithaca Times, there is a woman from San Diego, California, who a group of people, I'm not going to read it because it's going to take up my time, but you could have the article. They're suing. They're suing San Diego. Okay? Somebody needs to sue this county and the city, especially the city. I have exhausted myself. You know how many times I called this gentleman over here? Never once has he said at the council meeting, Faye, she's called me. She's complained about the Lyme bikes. I agree with that. That's what he tells me on the phone. When I spoke about the Lyme bikes months ago, and this is all archived on the county website, okay, he stood up and said, that's city business. Nobody is doing anything. In other communities, I spent hours and hours Googling. Everybody should be doing that. You are putting the Lyme bikes in the middle of the street at bike racks. I see them daily throughout the day, and it angers me. Why isn't anybody taking photographs? Nobody bothers to quote me. Nobody from the media has quoted me, okay? And I've been at this for a year now. Nobody's taking pictures. When I called my councilperson, Seth Murtaugh, and Duxton, and I said, the Lyme bikes are here and there, nobody cares. I said to Seth, can you take a picture of that one time when I saw him on the street? No, I'm not. Nobody cares. So what is it going to take to do something about it, okay? Mrs. Callis here doesn't care, okay? Go take a walk in the radius around here and see where the Lyme bikes are put. When you Google the problems of Lyme bikes throughout the world,
They're worth $250 million. And they don't want to give a dime to the city of Ithaca in the MOU, the first MOU, which the wonderful mayor of Ithaca brought the Lime bikes here. With no accountability, he said we'd have a public hearing. That hasn't happened. Other communities, they fine the Lime bikes. Other communities, do I have a minute left?
Yeah.
Other communities, if you go online, I can't afford to print these all out for you. You go online, you see other communities. The police are involved, and there's fines on the bikes when they're put in inappropriate places. There's complaints from business people, from people that need to use the streets. People are scared. These things come up to you, let alone the scooters. I want to know who's going to take accountability, because you're pushing that for tourism. When I go to the farmer's market, they're all there taking up bike space. If the city and the county cannot, first of all, we shouldn't have a dockless system. You should have a place where these bikes belong. They should be fine when they're taking up space. They're not only are they're not even in the bike rack itself. They're slanted because they have the basket. Doesn't anybody care? Doesn't anybody see this problem? Please read that article, because I'm ready to sue, but I don't have money to get a lawyer. I don't know where the sustainability people are. I don't know. I've been an activist for over 30 years for the environment and so many causes. You think I don't care?
Thank you,
I ride a bike every day. I just got off my bike.
Thank you, Faye. Thank you.
No, but I want a response, because this can't continue.
Okay, we'll take that under consideration.
This can't continue.
Ashley Miller and then Nancy Osborne.
I'm Ashley Miller. I live on Sears Street, so I'm here to talk about the county's proposal for a new office building. And I'd like to begin by expressing my appreciation to Rich John, who has been an exemplary representative, communicating frequently with the Sears and Tioga Street neighborhoods, attending meetings, responding to many emails, and arranging a special presentation for us of the county's possible plans. I would also like to thank Jay Franklin and Lisa Holmes for taking the time to attend that presentation. I have lived in this neighborhood long enough to have been active in the protest against Dr. Baker's demolition of the three Sears Street residences so he could extend his parking lot. That the city permitted this is shameful. That they allowed Dr. Baker to extend this parking lot without checking for a permit has meant that it has been illegal for over 30 years. The county now has a chance to correct this unfortunate situation. I'm gratified that 3 out of 4 basic plans for the Tioga and Sears Street property include housing on Sears Street. This is what our neighborhood desires. We desire neighbors instead of a deteriorating parking lot and an equally deteriorating hedge. We're a mixed neighborhood with a wide range of ages and occupations. What we lack, and what I would like to see in this location, is a return to 3 single-owner homes for families. Sears Street is a special location. Anyone who walks down this street, with the old courthouse on one end and Cascadilla Creek at the other end, knows what a special place it is. With 3 new homes replacing the parking lot and the unsightly, scrabbly hedge, it would be even better. Thank you.
Thank you. Nancy Osborne is the last person signed up. If anybody else wants to speak, got the forms in the back.
I'm Nancy Osborne. I live in the house on the corner of Sears and Cascadilla Avenue. Tonight, I'm reading a statement that was signed by 25 of us who live in the Tioga Sears Street neighborhood. And there's a bunch of them sitting right there. We distribute this to Rich John and our representatives on Common Council. We, who are residents and property owners in the Cascadilla Creek neighborhood, which consists of Cascadilla Avenue, Court, Sears, and Tioga Streets, would support the Tompkins County Legislature's proposal to develop the Tioga Sears Street properties if it includes residential housing on Sears Street with adequate off-street parking and is preferably owner-occupied housing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Anyone else? All right. I see George McGonigal. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming, George.
You're welcome.
From the city of Ithaca. Oh, I didn't realize. Didn't realize how hard it was for you to get here today. What happened?
Same distance as always.
Why did you have a seat, George?
Pardon?
You sit. What'd you do to yourself?
I was playing basketball and I hit my head on the rim and I came down. I ruptured my Achilles tendon.
Ouch. Well, thank you for making this effort and getting yourself here. Good to see you.
I'm getting tired of sitting around the house, so. Okay, I have a few things. They're mostly public works things that you might be interested in. The pre-construction work at the new Teganic Boulevard extension, Brindley Street Bridge, is underway. Bids are out for the paving. That project will start this year, but the fill will have to settle and firm up so that the bridge itself won't be built till next year. There's going to be a major sidewalk project on South Aurora Street this summer. They're going to build a brand new sidewalk on the east side of the street from Grandview Avenue, which is almost at the edge of the city, down to just past the school where there's existing sidewalk. And that will feed into the new sidewalk that the town of Ithaca is going to put in from Ithaca College down to the city line. So that should be an improvement. But South Aurora Street may be closed during this construction for a considerable amount of time. Maybe fully closed, maybe one lane. They don't know yet. The 200 block of North Cayuga Street, which you may have noticed is closed because of a huge water main burst, that probably won't reopen until June because while it's closed, we're fixing a bunch of other things, so it's going to take time. College Avenue is going to get a major infrastructure redo. It's going to get torn up, I think, this summer, and that's going to be a big, complex project. There's a lot of work going on in Stewart Park this summer, the playground construction, roof on the large pavilion. The Five Points intersection, which is at the top of Bell Sherman, we're studying on how to improve that. One of the options is a roundabout. That's one of the options. So we'll see how that goes. Design for dredging of Cascadilla's Creek is finally underway, and that dredging may actually begin by this coming November. So we look forward to that. The city is negotiating with NYSEG to buy our streetlights, and those negotiations are getting close to being final. So we'll be able to actually replace the light bulbs in our streetlights. Everybody on council very much appreciates Mr. Jason Molino coming to our meeting and talking about the Tioga and Sears Street property. And he gave an excellent presentation with several options. And I think I can speak for the rest of the council that I think we're unanimous in urging you to include housing on Sears Street in your redevelopment. In fact, my colleague Seth Murtaugh is filing a member filed resolution tomorrow night at our meeting. I think you may have received this. I could read it if you'd like.
Seth sent it to me, and I forwarded it, the link to it, about 4 o'clock today.
Okay. So I'll read the last resolved. After a million whereases, resolved that the City of Ithaca Common Council strongly recommends that the city honor the city's, that the county honor the city's comprehensive plan and respect the character of the neighborhood by dedicating the entire Sears Street frontage of the county's proposed office consolidation project to affordable residential use. And I, for one, would second what the neighbors said about owner-occupied, if possible. Okay, that's it. That's all I got.
Thank you, George. Any questions for George? Henry and then Mike Lane.
George, what are they doing on College Town and how long is it going to take?
What do you mean on College Town?
Well, on College Avenue. What are they?
They're going to repave it and they're going to put the electric underground and they're going to replace the sewer, water lines, gas. NYSEG's going to be doing their thing up there. It's a complete redo under the street as well as the street.
And what's the estimated time?
I think definitely most of the summer, maybe longer.
And Mike Lane?
George, on that resolution from Seth that you just read, is the city willing to put any money behind that, or does it just want the county to use its money to do what the city's failed to do for 30 years?
The city failed to buy the property?
Failed to enforce and put housing there or do anything with it. Is it just because it wants the county to spend its money to do this?
Well, I'll ask the city that question.
I am.
I don't know the answer.
Thank you.
Annie?
Thank you, George, for the update. So two things. As far as the Sears Street properties, as far as I'm concerned, I want to see if, you know, as best we can to figure out how to put, you know, residential back there again. I think that's not just a shame, a crime that, you know, 30 years ago those houses got demolished. So it's definitely something that I want to see if we can do. And the sidewalks, I'm very glad to hear about the sidewalk coming down from Ithaca College, because sometimes when I drive up there, it's very scary, with, especially in the evening with young people walking up and down the street. So thank you.
Thank you. One of the whereases, Mike, is mentions the county's housing strategy, which urges 500 new housing units per year in the county. So this could be a little bit of that.
Thank you.
Dan Klein.
I, in general, support the idea of adding housing to Sears Street. It is going to cost the county some parking spaces. And this is a big issue for us, not just for employees, but also for county residents that come to use county facilities for various services. So I would like to start floating the idea that the county, that the city consider some maybe 20-minute, 15-minute parking spots along Tioga Street in front of our new office building when it's finally up and going, so that reserved for people doing business at county offices. So I just wanted to put that idea.
I think that's a great idea. I don't think parking is evil.
You seem to be in a minority.
But yes, this is, Tompkins County is a rural county, and people come from all over the county to do county business. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dan, for that suggestion. And I would say that we, a while back, tried to get some handicapped spots on Tioga and or Court to around the courthouse complex. We're not able to get the city to do that, so I hope we'll be more successful on this. And we probably can't designate it has to be for county services, but that would obviously be the function. So if there's nothing else, I got a couple of things.
There's just, we're about to put in a 15-minute parking area in front of the temple. So okay. There's going to be some short-term parking on Court Street in the very near future.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to ask about Stewart Avenue. I didn't hear you say anything about that on your public works list.
I don't know anything about it.
Man. Okay. Could you find out, you know, where is it in the queue? What's the process?
In the past, that was dependent on a big grant that we have failed to get a couple times. But I will find out the answer to that question.
All right. And the Cornell has offered a very substantial amount of money to support that project. I assume it's not as much as that the federal grant you were going for, but if that federal grant isn't there, Cornell would very much like to talk to the city. They have tried. And the street lights you mentioned, is that in order to put LED lights into the street lights?
That's one of the goals we have, yeah. Yep.
Because that was part of our shared services plan where the municipalities were going to do that together with the cooperation of NYSEG. So that's great news. All right. Anything else for George? All right, thanks very much, and
thank
take
you.
Care of your
thank
tendon.
Thank you very much.
Deborah?
Get well soon.
All right, thanks so much. Legislators, privilege of the floor. Mike Lane.
A couple of things. We heard today, and Dave, you may have heard this, that the state is going ahead with the Route 38 bridge over Fall Creek in the village of Freeville. They apparently have let the bids, and it's gone to Economy Paving out of Cortland, and they will start construction very soon on that. So that's the state highway that runs through the village to Groton. The other thing I'd like to mention was I had the real privilege of attending the naturalization ceremony that was sponsored by our county clerk's office. They normally do four a year. This year, they were particularly requested to do another one, a fifth one, because there are a lot of people that need to be naturalized, and our Tompkins County Clerk's Office does such a fine job doing that. I attended. There were over 30 people that took the oath of citizenship from, I believe, 22 countries, and it was totally amazing to see the people from different countries there, Azerbaijan,
wow.
Iran, Iraq, South Korea, England, Canada, and they were all just beaming. They were there with their families, many of them. They had taken the step and worked hard to pass the requirements to become United States citizens, and I think it was reflected very well on our county and the folks at the Tompkins County Clerk's Office.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Anna, and then Annie?
Two things. One, I actually have been to a few public forums recently, and also we've had a lot of people coming to our meetings, and I wanted to thank you all for coming. I very much appreciate hearing. I know it's a lot of time out of your evenings to come to our meetings and share your thoughts, so just wanted to thank you for doing that. And these meetings are recorded. I don't know if people knew that.
So anybody who spoke, you are now officially recorded for posterity for all eternity. So thank you. The other one is a very strange one that I'm going to share that is, it might seem odd, but this weekend, my aunt, who turned 70 this year, came up to visit, and my mother wanted to give her a birthday present as a women's empowerment, amazing, you know, it was a bunch of women going out, three generations of women, and turns out there is an annual Empire Burlesque Festival here in Ithaca, New York, every year. And I've never gone, and my mother bought us all tickets, and it was one of the most astounding, empowering, women's body positive experiences I've ever had, and I just wanted to say that we have that here for all the women in the audience, for all the men in the audience, actually. I think it's something worth checking out. There's a wide breadth of cultures and experiences here in Tompkins County worth experiencing, so just thought I'd share.
Burlesque, you said, right?
Empowerment to women.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Deborah wants to hear more, I could tell.
It's something worth supporting.
I'm as empowered as anybody could stand to be.
It's a four-day festival. It's worth, you know, supporting the women.
Anyone else? Annie, I'm sorry, Annie. Didn't write you down. Go ahead.
Thank you. I wanted to recognize that Sunday was the Transgender Day of Visibility. And so it's a group of folks who a lot of people don't know much about. And so I encourage you to, you know, read an article, look on Facebook. There's a lot of different things you could share, a lot of different new information out. For instance, one article that I just read said that 3% of school-age children identify, I think it was high school children, identify as transgender. And that was quite a lot more than people thought. And a couple of events, because I know people's summers and get filled up quick. Well, the first one is just in April. It's April 30th. The city of Ithaca is from 6 to 8 is having their flood mitigation presentation at the library. I think most of us legislators will be in a budget retreat that night, so we might not be able to go, so we're hoping that it's going to be filmed or recorded in some way, and I don't know if any of our staff can go to that. And let's see, June 8th is Finger Lakes Pride Day in Geneva, and they have a whole day of different events for the LGBTQ community and our allies. Saturday, June 15th, is Trumansburg Porch Fest. I think it's our third year we've been doing that, so if you have a great thing to do by yourself or if you have folks coming into town, and it's a good thing to do to make a day of it. We have a lot of good restaurants in Trumansburg. And June 23rd is the tentative date for the Finger Lakes Pulse Pride Picnic from 12 to 4, and you can look on the Finger Lakes Pulse Facebook page for more details if you want to keep up on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Annie. Mike Sigler, and then Deborah.
I just wanted to chime in quickly, too. One of the speakers earlier did mention Rich John and what a good job he was doing. I just wanted to agree with you. He's gone to your meetings. He has brought that information back. He's been very clear, very concise about what the community wants there. And to him, even though he's not here, I'll speak to the empty chair. He usually is here. But I just wanted to say, you know, that I really do appreciate that. He definitely lets us know what's going on with this issue. So just kudos to Mr. John. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Agree with that. Debbie, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I was recently in a very large city in another country that prides itself on being a mecca for all sorts of athleticism and alternative means of transportation. They have complete streets and very wide sidewalks. They have lots and lots of bikes. and they have lots and lots of scooters, motorized and otherwise. And I know that this is the city's decision and not the county's, but I would strongly urge the city to put the brakes on when it comes to the scooters, because, you know, it was just a nightmare driving and walking. And the sidewalks in Bordeaux are three or four times the width of the sidewalks here in Ithaca. So I can't even imagine what would happen if we had those motorized scooters.
Thank you, Deborah. Anybody else? Okay, I've got a couple of things. I'll just do my report now. Then we'll, as I said, reorder the agenda and get to the Tioga Street discussion in a little bit. First off, Jason will be reporting during his report about the state budget. I wanted to mention we've dug a little bit and we found that the third county court that we have been lobbying for has not been included at this time. I did reach out to another contact in the in Senate Leader Stuart Cousins' office. She will look into it for me. There may be a cleanup budget bill, where there are relatively small amounts of money that either get forgotten or there are mistakes, and that could happen. I understand from Barbara Lifton there were a couple of other courts, a couple of other counties that requested judges as well. So apparently they didn't want to go ahead with just one county. Barbara Lifton, Assemblywoman Lifton, was extremely helpful in this effort. I think we've come very close, and I have confidence that one way or another we're gonna get this position either through the court of claims route or through the elected office route. And I think we have Barbara to thank for moving that along. Senator O'Mara has been helpful as well, but being in the minority in the Senate, he doesn't have the same kind of juice that he had last year. So we need to keep plugging on that. I want to thank everybody who went to the public meeting on the airport. I was out of town last week. I really appreciate it. Thanks to Shauna for reading the statement that I had put together. And I think eight of you attended, and I think that's it was very helpful. Really a great showing and a good conversation that I think was appreciated by perhaps not all the participants, but appreciated by many, and I think everybody appreciated that you all were there. So thanks for going. And I wanted to mention that we got word today of an announcement of the Clean Energy Action Plan from New York State. This looks like a great new opportunity that is targeted right here in Tompkins County. The Clean Energy Action Plan provides relief for businesses and residents affected by a utility company gas moratorium. Through the plan, the state will help lower energy costs for consumers, promote economic development, and provide additional resources for community awareness and support. As part of this, NYSERDA is offering increased incentives for access to reliable clean energy alternatives to natural gas. The Clean Energy Action Plan applies to Con Edison customers in southern Westchester County and NYSEG customers in the town of Lansing, New York. And there's more detail on this. I got it from Irene Weiser, and then Katie Borghella had some other information as well. And there's something called a carbon challenge of $15 million that will be available, and with awards of up to $5 million, we believe that the airport will be eligible for that. So, I hope that my snarky email to the Department of Public Service might have had, I don't know, anything to do with this, but this looks really targeted specifically to the problems we've had here in Lansing. And we're going to certainly dig into this. I think Katie was forwarding it to Lansing to make sure they had it. I don't know if you've talked about it, Megan. Katie, you're here. Hey. Okay, fantastic. Well, so we'll look forward to following up with that. If you had anything else to add on it, Katie, did you want to say anything?
It's just an evolving
project. Can you go to the mic? Yes.
I would just say it's evolving. It's a brand new thing that was just announced, and we will track it closely and keep everyone aware. More opportunities to come.
Right. Deborah?
I was just going to ask if somebody could forward it to me and any other members of PEAK who might be interested. I'm sure we all would like to see it.
Sure. We'll forward it to I'll forward what I've got here to everybody like later tonight. We had been told that there was something else coming soon, so maybe it was kind of waiting for the budget. I don't know, but this looks like a new step, a new opportunity, or some new opportunities targeted here. That's my report. If there are any other questions.
Can I just add a factual?
I'm afraid, Faye, we're moving on.
Just very quick.
Faye? You understand, we don't do that. So I'm going to go to the consent agenda. If there's anything to be pulled, please let me know. Are there resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Anna Kellis.
I'd like to pull I and maybe give a quick statement of why. Is that possible?
Why don't you do the statement
during my committee report?
Is that
report?
HED? Or is that's HED, right? Yeah.
Do it during my report.
Yeah. We'll pull
yep.
I.
So I'd like to pull it.
Okay. Thank you. For anything else? Okay. Resolutions on the consent agenda. Resolution A.
Pull for a technical amendment.
Got it. Okay. Resolution B, resolution to consider applications for funding from the Municipal Housing Affordability Grant Program for Round A 2019. That's ID 8520. Resolution C, Spring 2019 Tourism Project Grant Awards, ID 8503. Resolution D, Mike, do you have to pull? This is the marketing and advertising?
Yeah, please.
Pulling D. Resolution E, Spring 2019 Community Celebration Grant Awards, ID 8505. Resolution F, Amendment of the 2019 Tompkins County Budget to reflect appropriation of 2019-2020 budgets for the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council and authorization to implement the amendment, ID 8466. And Resolution G, Award of Bid, Waste Hauling and Disposal Services, Department of Recycling and Materials Management, ID 8497. And appointments to the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Henry Granison. Stop DWI Advisory Board, Rich John. Traffic Safety Committee, Rich John and Kyle Koskinen. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Deborah, seconded by Shauna. All in favor? Just raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Okay, staff, let's see. If there's anything that's going to take a long time, I know the public is waiting for the Tioga Street issue as well. Brian, yours is probably – you're here for the 911, the surcharge? Is that all? Okay, not raise the age. All right. Can we go to Resolution K, Henry Granison, Vice Chair of Public Safety?
Okay. I'd like to introduce Resolution K, Document ID 8502, memorializing the governor and the legislature of the state of New York to enact and sign the law legislation amending Section 303 of the county law to allow Tompkins County to extend its access line surcharge to pay the costs of maintaining and operating an emergency communication system.
ID 8502B, seconded by Anna. Is there a discussion? Deborah.
I wanted to offer a slight amendment to the title in honor of my honorable predecessor. Could we change memorializing to urging?
Yes, please.
Yes.
All right, that's friendly. Is there any other discussion? Annie.
I'm just seeing that this is for a $1 surcharge. I'm just wondering if we need more than that in the future. I don't know if you can answer that. Brian or anybody?
I could speak to it. This is actually an addition. The surcharge is 65 cents. The addition is another 35 cents onto it to make it a dollar.
It's the other way around.
I'm sorry. It's a 65-cent surcharge in addition to the 35 that was there. There are two communities that have this in the past, us and Onondaga County. So this was enacted 10 years ago. It has lapsed as of July of this year. We're acting for another 10 years. It was created initially to support the build-out of our 911 system. And this is a continuation to help support it in terms of maintaining it up and upkeeping it. So this is really home rule legislation that is just continuing what was done 10 years ago. And there's only two counties that have it.
And the question is, could we add more? But I think there's a limit. Isn't that right?
I don't know if there's a limit on it or not. That I wouldn't know the answer to that question.
Brian, do you know? Acting Director, Department of Emergency Response, Brian Robison. Interim Director. Okay.
I too don't know if there's a limit. I know that there has never been one granted above. You have?
It says in an amount not to exceed $1.
Okay.
Never mind.
Good catch. All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Ready to vote? With that one amendment, all in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Megan, you're here for the housing. Which one? Which resolution? Or do you want to just hang around for Tioga Street? I don't mean. Okay. Okay, is there anything else anybody else is waiting for specifically? All right. Jason, we're about to go to Tioga. All right, let's lower the screens and hope he's...
I didn't even see him leave. Two-minute break?
Less than that.
Everybody can get food.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do that. Ta-da! Not that usually that obvious when somebody takes a break.
I thought you were gonna do another.
Sorry.
Thanks, Megan.
All right. Well, we were about to go to the county attorney, yeah, right. But we shuffled long right. enough. Okay.
All right.
Jason, you're on.
Okay. Is it up, Kevin?
No.
So before we get started, I'll just give a little bit of introduction to this. So in last fall, the legislature executed an option agreement for a four-month review period of a series of parcels between Sierra Street and North Tioga Street. And during that process, we have evaluated, and really our charge was to look at the possibilities of using that parcel to meet space needs. We took and built off of the quote-unquote center of government study that was done in 2012, updated space needs, and then started to look at the parcel and could a new facility be constructed, and would that meet our needs? And really, that's what this discussion is led. This presentation is about to try to get you to the point of saying yes or no. This parcel can meet our needs, or yes it can, or no it can't. There is the formal analysis that will be ready for you later this week. This is a summary of it. There are supplemental analyses, like an energy one that goes with it, which I know you all probably won't be interested in reading. And it'll be with a cover memo from us on it. But this is a summary of that, and we'll have that to you by the end of the week. I would also like to add that a team of staff got together for this, and Jay Franklin was the lead on this and did a great job with it. Worked with Katie Bagella, Lisa Holmes, Amy Hendricks, and Aurel Mario were the big contributors to this, and they all played a very important role in this, especially Jay for really organizing it and keeping the ball moving and partnering with Holt, the architects and some of the subcontractors. And they're here today, and they've done a great job with this. So that said, we'll get into this. Most of this you have seen. There is some new, we have two new scenarios above the prior eight that you're familiar with, and we'll get into talking a little bit about that. So just a little bit of a recap. This is a snapshot of where most of our offices are. This is Center Ithaca here. This is the Office of Human Rights. This is the COFA building. This is Social Services. This is what I'll call Annex C, main courthouse, old jail, and this is where we are right here. This is the old courthouse. And here is the parcel, or parcels, I should say, because I think there's a few parcels, and the area that we're looking to consider. This is the DMV, and this is public health, not nearly located. And the reason we show this map is because we're talking about taking departments from here, here, taking departments from here, and possibly here, and here, and trying to figure out, can they work on this space? Or what is the mix match to be able to make it effective? As we went through this process, one thing we did start to realize is that, and I'll get to this later on, is there is there's an ineffective layout of service delivery amongst a lot of these departments, and I'll get more into that, and that really came out of this process. So the purpose of the study is to review the current and future space needs. Again, this was building off of some of the work that had been done in the past. There were meetings with every one of these departments, and then some, to understand current space needs, future space needs. We looked at trying to consolidate offices into a single location downtown to maximize its efficiencies and minimize lease payments. So if I go back here, we are leasing space here, and we are leasing space here. We're also leasing space in a facility off of Hanshaw Road for storage of election equipment, all the election machines. So we also looked at that as well. Build a model municipal building. By model municipal building, by building policy that you have, a green building policy that you've adopted, any new building or any new construction over $500,000 would be LEED Silver Standard. We're looking at a possible model building, which would be higher than that. And improve parking options for employees and visitors. So this was the purpose of it. Four questions kind of came of this. Would the property be able, this is the Tioga Street and Sears Street properties, would the property be able to meet our current and future space needs? Now, space needs started at 37,000, and I say 37 to 46 because you'll see the ninth and tenth scenario we're going to present includes really almost going back to the center of government concept, and we'll explain reasons why. How much additional parking can be accommodated on the site? Would we be able to restore residential use to the Sears Street side of the property? And could all this occur if we stayed within the confines of the current zoning challenges of this property? And I'll talk a little bit about that as well. Existing conditions, the main courthouse, to kind of piggyback off of what Martha said, the third court judge, we feel, is closer than it is further away. Made a lot of headway this year, a lot more than the prior and years before that. The county clerk is in the basement of a secure building, so from a public access perspective, it is not desirable. And the DA is crammed in up on the top floor of the main courthouse, and the grand jury room, if you haven't seen it, we can show it to you, is very, very cramped. Moving the county clerk out of the basement is a key component of anything we do with space needs downtown. And making way for the third judge, the only way to do that is to get them out, move the DA to the basement, and open up the third floor for a third judge. So those are kind of musts, I would say, when we start talking about space changes. And then where does the county clerk go? This is the other question. The old jail and Annex C, so the old jail is the building that I'm in. Annex C is the building the Board of Elections and Assessment ITS are in. It's an inefficient layout and overcrowded. If you've been into the old jail, it's where HR, finance, and the county admin, the county attorney are. It's a very narrow building. It was a jail. It wasn't necessarily built for office use, but it's been retrofitted. And it's not the way you would build office space today. It's ineffective, and there's overcrowding, particularly on the third floor. There's overcrowding throughout the building. Annex C, again, not the greatest layout either in terms of business flow and operations. Renovations would achieve modest workflow improvements and energy efficiencies. So that's probably more so with the old jail. You can only do so much with that narrow rectangular space. There's only so many ways you can cut it up. And energy efficiencies for both. These are older buildings. You're only going to be able to achieve so many efficiencies when it comes to work improvements and energy. The setup of services are not customer friendly. They're scattered efficiency. That's not to say the services aren't friendly. They're very friendly, but the setup of it isn't. multiple public-facing departments are not located in a single location. So, for example, and this kind of came out as we go through the process, and it really came out when we got everyone together to talk about it, the synergy between the clerk's office and assessment, how many people go to one and need to go to the other, how many people need to go to one and need to go to finance to pay their taxes or to get their residency, how many people are public-facing from an HR perspective. Keep in mind they're the civil service unit for all of the municipalities where people apply, get applications, those types of things. So those are just a few examples of public-facing departments that are not Board of Elections. Board of Elections has high activity, especially around this time of year, for petitions. So the synergies in terms of being able to build off of each other are not in a great location. They're sending people to other buildings versus if you were to have a one-stop shop, so to speak, where a good chunk of your public-facing services were in the same location. And offices could be more synergistic. So, for example, there is good connectivity between assessment and planning. All right, they're both many times look at land use or they're doing land relationships. They overlap in GIS needs, and there's you know, being closer to each other provides a greater advantage, even from being in separate buildings. The likelihood that you're going to have more conversations, the likelihood that you're going to walk down the hallway and bump into each other to talk about issues related to each other is more likely in the same building than they are in separate buildings, even though they're 20 feet apart, maybe a little bit more than 100 feet apart. So this kind of came out as we went through the process. And lease space don't align with department needs. So, for example, assigned counsel has a bomb shelter in it. Yeah, that's nothing that we would outfit. It's extra space that we don't need, but it's the space that we have because it's what we leased. So, you know, with lease space, a lot of times you get what you can or you deal with what you have. So those are kind of the existing conditions and needs. Current zoning is a problem, so I'm going to shift gears now to the actual site and the parcels that we're talking about. And here are the parcels that are labeled. Here's one parcel, 119, 117. This is formerly 111-13, which is merged with this 412, 414 Tioga, and then the 408. And part of the challenge with this property in general, and this is not uncommon for many municipalities, typically cities and villages, is as they go through rezoning every few decades, whatever the case may be, there are pockets that are just happen by default that have odd, where different zoning districts link up and they're not, they're not green space, so they're not being built for the first time. They're prior developed areas, usually can be over 100 years old, and now they're non-conforming uses, meaning they don't comply with the current zoning. That's not an uncommon situation. And in here, you have an odd scenario. You have an R2B, which is right here, as you can see, R2B. This is residential. Then you have the court special use district over here. Then down here to the south of this dotted line is the National Historic Registry. And then this area here to the south of this dotted line is the local historic registry. You have literally three different overlapping zones, which to a certain extent work fine if you're over here or work fine if you're over here. But this is not a conforming use, meaning if you were to build this building today in this location on this lot, you would not be able to build it because it wouldn't have the required parking under the current zoning code. Okay? And if you were to subdivide this off, you necessarily wouldn't have the required parking that the zoning code requires. What this does also is it prohibits development from happening. So as some of the residents explained, these were demolished, three plus decades ago. They're currently being used as parking, which is not consistent with the local zoning code. It's an unauthorized use or a violation. Oops, let me go back. A violation of the zoning ordinance. But in order to do something, let's say, with this commercial building, to not have any parking related to it makes it less desirable to buy it or buy the property or develop something here. And then to try to build something with any density is not consistent with the building code, with the zoning code either. The point is the zoning is not necessarily easily developed in terms of the property is not easily developable with the current zoning arrangement, with the different overlaps in the zoning codes. The reason I explain that is real estate is prime in downtown Ithaca. It's expensive and it goes up pretty quick. This property and this series of properties have not been developed, partly I believe, and I think we believe, because of the odd zoning configuration. And the only way you would get return on investment in this small size of a parcel is to have density. Well, density doesn't work in this area. It doesn't work in the zoning code. So that kind of defeats any real private investment interest. The other thing that's challenging about this site is that it's in what I would call a transitional neighborhood, meaning you're transitioning from a commercial downtown district into a mixed-use district where you have some commercial residential uses and into a further north residential area. So that's a transitional neighborhood. Less so on the Sears Street side, which is primarily residential. Meaning if you're going to do something here, you don't want anything to stick out, or your planning process is going to run into challenges because the city's going to want to preserve the transition of the neighborhood. So from a private development perspective, it has challenges. Obviously, from what we've talked about, the county doesn't necessarily have to comply with the local zoning code going through a public balancing test, which allows us some flexibility to try to still meet or try to conform or try to best accommodate the zoning in this area so it doesn't compromise the character of the neighborhood. So I'm going to get into some of the scenarios which most of you have seen. I'm going to go through these relatively quickly until we get to the last two that you haven't seen, but I'll review them again. I just also want to preface this that while we are talking about a series of parking and residential development options, they can be interchanged for the most part when the building stays the same. So while we're going to show you a total parking scenario, you'll see the next one will be a total residential scenario on Sears Street. The building itself here doesn't necessarily change. So you can probably have any hybrid of options you want. This is just to show you options of what could be the case, okay? So this is scenario one. This is a full parking option. It builds a three-story building here on Tioga Street. It's about a 37,000-square-foot office space. It retains the 408 Tioga Street. That's the red building. And actually, what we would propose is restoring it and using it for office space. I know it shows it as kind of one big building. This is just more for for viewing purposes. We haven't, nor would we come to the conclusion right now if this would be connected to the big building, the existing building or not. There are definitely options for it. Parking for the remainder portion of the properties, Sears Street here. This does not have a pass-through, but as brought up in a prior conversation, you could do a pass-through here, a walk-through. You could allow for vehicular access here. In this case, we didn't. You could have just pedestrian, or you could do both. On Tioga Street, it actually demolishes the old dental building, which is right here, demolishes it and shifts the edge of the building south, so it puts a 24-foot-wide driveway between this parcel here, which is a commercial use, but a smaller house that has turned into a commercial use. Gains roughly, give or take, 42 spaces and no residential component to it.
Excuse me, Jason. I have a printout that has the same drawing that says 48 parking spots.
Yes, that was an older version. We've put a plus and minus in there because through our discussion, you'll see the plus or minus shows a little bit more, a little bit less. Without actually knowing the layout of the building, where corners are, you might give or take a few. It doesn't account for handicap accessible parking, that type of thing. So
thank you.
We probably should have put plus minus to begin with.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Scenario two, as you can see, scenario two is the same building footprint here. All right, it's just a little different. This is what I mean about interchangeability with residential. You want to do three, you could do three. You want to do one, you could do one. The point is this is an option that to consider. This is basically splitting up the Sears Street parcels adjacent to Sears Street into three parcels. Those three parcels and this one would be as three single-family homes with parking. In this case, these homes and these lot size would conform with the existing R2B zoning. So you wouldn't need any area variances to build a house here. It takes the rest of it and develops parking. Again, the building itself stays the same, three stories, 37,000 square feet, and restoration of the restoring of 408 Tioga. This gains about 25 plus or minus parking spots. Here's an example of some things that have been built recently in the city of Ithaca that could go into that lot, these types of homes. This just gives you an example. Here's a different scenario, scenario three, which adds a little bit more density. This involves five townhomes, so it gives you, again, two more units here. Same in terms of the building footprint and same in terms of parking gain, and that would be about 25 spaces. Here's an example of a townhouses that have been built recently. I believe this is INHS here. This just gives you, again, an example of something that what it could be. Scenario four is a duplex option. This is, subdividing these parcels into two and putting two duplexes, so it's four units. Again, same footprint. And again, 25 parking spaces, give or take. And here's an example, probably more so this, of what could be built there. And notice there's parking on either side of this as well. Scenario five, this was kind of a split down the middle option here. And this, just so you know, I think, Mike, you had brought this up, this could be shifted up here as well. You could do it either way. If you did a one single-family parcel, you could shift it up here instead and use this for parking down here. Again, footprint doesn't change, 37,000 square feet plus this, adding about 35, you know, give or take, parking spaces. Scenario six. Scenario six is a response to, can we get another row of parking here? So this pushed this property line west and flipped these houses around. They're no longer conforming with the R2B zone, but you could fit three single-family homes here, and this is actually tandem parking. So you've got one in front of each other. We have some of that tandem parking out here where the court employees use that. So you have one that drives in, parks, and then one that parks behind it. And this gains you more parking than not having the tandem parking. It gains you a decent amount of spaces. Again, the building doesn't change. Building 7 is, again, taking the tandem parking action and flipping the duplexes and kind of squishing them down a little bit, but you are getting 4 units here. So this was an option 8, which was, say, well, let's get rid of 408 altogether. Why, you know, let's not restore the building. Let's not get into restoring old buildings. And this would actually subdivide the property a little bit to the north of the corner of it, so you'd have entryway in here. This parking would be sold with the property. And then this building actually condenses, changes its shape from before, becomes a little bit more narrow, and would go up a fourth floor. And you would not get the 37,000 square feet out of it. You'd get 32,000 square feet. You would also then use the back end for some different type of parking arrangement. You've got some tandem spots here and some single spots here. Technically, I guess if you wanted to, you could subdivide this parcel a little bit more here and maybe keep this for parking. We did talk briefly about that, too. So scenario 9 is, and scenario 10 are new. And when we met as a team, we had a lot of different department heads in one big meeting room. We met over at the Tompkins Trust building to see what a new building was like, and we started to shuffle departments around and say who would go where, and this was on an older model, you know, this type of footprint, you know, who would go where, what would go where, and so on and so forth. It was about a 3-hour meeting. It was interesting because everybody got upset with everybody else. Nobody wanted to do anything. It was a real good team building exercise. I don't think Jonathan talked to me for a day or two afterwards. Yeah. But what we came out of this is, you know what? What happened is someone got left out, meaning someone had to go someplace else, particularly in the old jail building, and there were synergies lost in relationships to departments. So, for example, the county attorney and I work hand in hand. We probably talk to each other several times a day on work-related matters because we are right down the hall. Finance is right below. Below me, I talk to the finance on a regular basis, or HR is 2 floors below. That synergy and that closeness and proximity means something. There's value to that. And under these scenarios, someone had to move. Either finance had to move, attorney had to move. We had to move out into a different building, which became a challenge from a synergy perspective. So we said, well, wait a minute here. What if we extended the second and third stories on this model westerly, where the shaded blue area is, and moved everyone into one building? We vacated the old jail, meaning HR, finance, county admin, and attorney moved into the new building. So it's really the center of government, right? And what would that look like, and can it happen? So there's two scenarios where we have a center of government option. This actually has, if you can see, the blue shaded area is a second and third floor story extending westward, and underneath it is covered parking. That's covered parking. So the first floor is preserved for parking. And it works. And this is also a split of an option with a residential component to it, a single, you know, one up here. If you wanted to, you could do 2 more here, or you could do all parking. But this is just to kind of show you what can happen. And this was kind of an interesting layout because we got everything we were looking for in terms of achieving, which was getting everyone in a single location. There were definitely synergies in layout. There's some challenges with this just because it's a large footprint and you have a lot of interior space, but we didn't really get into too much in the cut-up of the offices or anything on those lines. But it, square footage-wise, allows you to put everyone under one roof. Then the question came up of, all right, well, the old jail. Now we've got a vacated old jail. Well, technically, you wouldn't need to do as an amount of renovation that you would do with it if we were to stay in the building. So you probably would still do the boiler removal, but you definitely probably wouldn't do the conference room build out, and you probably wouldn't do all of the improvements that would have been done if you had a set office, a set series of offices that would be going into it. However, what it did open up was the discussion of possibly bringing Tompkins Workforce Career Center in the Department of Labor into a county building where they're currently leasing space over at Center Ithaca. That option right now is we lease space through the DOL, which then leases space from Center Ithaca. Right now we're looking at the possibility of seeing a doubling in our square footage rent from $17 to possibly close to $40 a square foot. We are a sublet of the DOL, and bringing it into a county building changes the relationship a little bit. It also allows you to continue to have the training space that they have because you've got three floors of open space. It could also allow you to have some additional space, just additional space for when we know we might need additional space. It wouldn't be a lot, but you'd have some space, whether it's for storage, whether it's for meeting rooms, so on and so forth. So that's what came out of this option. Again, it looks at the 46,000 square foot office space option. This is the same thing, a 46,000 square foot office space, but it's a fourth story option. Now, four stories, believe it or not, still is about the same height as the what's on the corner? The corner building, the temple. It's actually a little bit shorter, but roughly about the same size as the temple. So it's still, I would say, is consistent with the character of the neighborhood. We strived for a three-story before, but this kind of opens, this does a few things in terms of the layout of a building. It doesn't have as much interior space, meaning space without windows and so on and so forth. But it's another alternative to do what I would call the center of government option or the 46,000 square foot option. And again, these are interchangeable. You can have these or not have these, but it's just there for showing of options. And this actually is the same footprint of the three-story building. So those are the two scenarios.
Jason, is that a full fourth story?
Yes. I'm sorry. Jay, it's not a full story.
Third and fourth.
It's like a wedding cake type setup.
The third is smaller than the second.
Right? Yes.
And the fourth is smaller than the third.
Yeah. That would probably be set back off the Tioga Street edge, if I had to take a guess. Yeah, that's a good point. It's not a full story encompassment. Joe Mariana asked for an office on the top floor. I told him I was going to put him in the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. I know he's watching this, so he can. This was a great idea. We were trying to figure out how to compare them all. This was just a simple spreadsheet of the options, the scenarios, the square footages, the give or take parking spaces, Sears Street options, which of course is interchangeable with parking depending on yours, whether or not it's conforming, housing is conforming with the zoning code, includes renovations of the red house, and then the types of, the number of floors for, and it kind of gives you a little bit of a summary over here. Good way of just cheat sheet of all the different scenarios, excuse me. Here's a parking review in another perspective. It involves all the different scenarios up top here. It talks about the additional spots that are gained with the scenarios as they were shown, the percentage increase over the current. As you can see, they all gain parking, and then the parking per FTE. Now, I will say the number 10 scenario accounts for an additional 15 people coming into the complex area, because if you were to move Tompkins workforce over, that's about as many people that are in the office. So we just assumed they all drove cars. What it did is it impacted your FTE number here, your parking per FTE. But as you can see, they all gain a little bit over the current situation. So parking alternatives, I think, is also important to talk about. We did connect with the city a little bit and the DIA just as what's going on and what are things that could be promoted better. This is not by any means an exclusive list, but it starts the conversation to say there are other alternatives to parking. This Ithaca Car Share, a guaranteed backup ride home, is kind of an interesting concept. I don't think we've advertised it as much. Ride matching isn't anything that's been advertised a whole lot, and it's just started this year with the DIA. And there is blind bikes. That obviously is in effect as well. And something that's being worked on is a variety of locations is a possible park and ride. I know Wegmans is one of them, but also there's 13. So there's some discussions right now that the DIA and the city are involved with other partners. So as this evolves, transportation management is something that, you know, there is opportunity for. I would say that any new building we build would probably be outfitted with some shower facilities and locker rooms to allow for folks to walk, run, or ride their bikes to work, so on and so forth. But I think it'd be important at least to mention that these are things and options that we have the ability to promote more and take more advantage of that we probably aren't as much as we could be. Financial analysis. So here's the important elements of it. So what we did is we did several different analysis, and in the memo you'll get and you'll see two options, which are really scenarios 1 through 8 and scenarios 9 through 10, because 9 through 10 is a little more costly with the extra square footage. But it's not a whole lot different. In this, and what I'm going to show you here, they're all combined, so I give you ranges just so you understand highs and lows of things. And just before I get into this, this includes several improvements. It includes a new building. So it includes, it includes the demolition of the current dental building, construction of a new building, restoration of 408. It includes improvements to the main courthouse for the DA's office. It includes improvements to the old jail. And it includes some renovations to this building's first floor as well. Okay, so it's just not one building. It is really five elements of five different areas and locations to it. The main courthouse is roughly 1.2. Oh, and the human services annex, I forgot about that. That's we're talking about the veterans build-out and possible using that annex as conference room space. Old jail costs range from 1.2 to 1.9. Old courthouse is a little over $500,000. Land acquisition itself. And then the new building costs range from $12.8 to $14.5 million. So roughly about an $18.5 to $19.5 million project. Now, how to project finance it? So there were several things, and I'll go through this. The memo is a little bit more descriptive, but it gives you the gist of it. The sale of Seal Street land. So that could be a variety of things. It could be nothing if you don't sell it, or it could be we roughly counted for $60,000 a parcel if you were to sell three parcels, roughly $180,000. The sale of NXC, this was roughly $600,000. I don't know that I go through it a whole lot in this presentation, but in the memo I do talk about the resale value and the benefit in terms of growth and taxable assessed value of Building C, and then if you were to have a full redevelopment of that corner, what that adds value to. And I think we were on the low end of NXC resale. The old jail budget appropriation, so this year you budgeted about a little under $2.4 million to do the old jail renovations. They have been put on hold as we've been going through this process. So since you've already appropriated, it would be redirected towards a project. Capital fund balance, HQ fund, you have a fund for capital projects. Over time, as projects have come in under budget, we have accrued some surplus in that. We would commit about $3 million of that surplus to this project. General fund balance, you have a good fund balance right now, about a little more than 20% in terms of unassigned fund balance in your general fund. This could be anywhere between $3.5 to $4.5 million of fund balance to be put towards the project. And then debt service, general obligation bonds would be about around $9-ish million. That's your general obligation bond. The decrease in general fund leases would be if you were to no longer lease space for the Board of Elections equipment, which in all of these scenarios you would move the Board of Elections election machines into the basement of the new building. If you were not to lease space for assigned counsel, if you were not to lease space for the Office of Human Rights, you would basically decrease expenses in the general fund, opening up capacity to take on some more debt. And that translates into a little more than $1 million of additional debt you could take on for the equivalent of what those lease payments are. If Tompkins workforce were to come over, it gets you a little bit more capacity. So basically what it is right now you're paying anywhere between $100,000 to $125,000 worth of lease payments a year. If you no longer had the lease payments, you could take on a little bit more debt and substitute that. The other element about this that's, I think, important to understand is that if you were to do, if you were to finance this with a combination of fund balance and obligation and bonding, it would fit within your current capital plan and your capital contribution. So every annually you provide a half a percent increase in your annual capital contribution. If you continued that moving forward, you would be able to fit this project within that and still have additional capacity in your capital program to do other capital projects throughout the county. So from this perspective, it fits within your capital financing mechanism that you have. You levy a certain amount of money every year for capital projects and debt, and you would be able to support this project through that. Okay. Obviously, this doesn't consider any grants you might get, any reimbursables you might get. Doing an energy-efficient building, you might get some NYSERDA opportunity. There might be other opportunities out there. So anything additional we get would obviously come off your bottom line. New construction. So other variables to consider. New construction assumes a LEED Silver. If you wanted to do a LEED Gold, you're adding maybe $500,000 to the ticket price of this. If you want to go LEED Platinum, maybe another $800,000 to $1 million.
On top of the 500?
No. Here, we had a long debate about that. If you were to go the platinum, it would not be in addition to the 500.
Okay. Yeah, so it would be 3 to 5 more than gold.
Three?
300,000 to 500,000 more than the gold.
Right. Yes, yeah. Right. Okay. If you were to go to gold, you would add $500,000. If you were to go to platinum, you would add 800 to a million.
And what would platinum include? Oh, sorry.
Sorry?
I was just wondering what platinum included.
I'll get to that in a second. Yep.
And passing.
Are either of those net zero?
Net zero would be platinum.
Okay.
Yep. Maybe I should have put that one first. I'll talk briefly about what they include. It's not an exclusive list to it, but it includes some of it. Project financing considers the current capital plan, existing and future debt capacity, and continued 0.5% annual capital contribution. Use of fund balance and debt service may vary based on additional costs, obviously, and any additional revenues as results from sale of property or anything else that comes about, grants and so on. So preliminary energy scenarios, the baseline is a 30% energy savings. LEED Silver includes air source heat pumps, additional insulation, improved windows, lighting, Energy Star equipment. 40% would be a LEED Gold, everything that the prior county baseline has, plus heat pump water heaters and a rooftop leased solar units. And zero LEED Platinum would be, and I'll send this out to everyone so you don't have to take pictures. I can email it to you.
She's taking a picture of you.
ground source heat pumps and a leased offsite leased arrangement for solar power. So this by no means is the exclusive list, nor am I prepared to give you a detailed explanation of every element of it, but it gives you a snapshot of what would be what each category would be considered. And we have a more in-depth, a little bit more in-depth engineering review as part of this study that you'll get by the end of the week, so you'll get a little bit more detail out of it. Operating-wise, also, I should add that any one of these scenarios has about the same operating cost as Building C is today. So roughly Annex C costs about $30,000 for gas and electric and sun utilities. Any one of these scenarios would be just under that. So it would be anywhere between what they estimated, $22,000 to $29,000 for O&M. So it would be technically per square foot a lot less because you'd be getting more square foot out of it. I know that question came up before. Again, these are preliminary. They give you kind of an understanding of where you're going with
it. But you're saying the annual utility costs to accommodate all these offices that move into this building, those costs are the same as Building C alone is
less.
Right now.
They're less.
Less.
Right, guys? Did I get that right? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
More information is needed. Yeah, right. So, like I said, this is preliminary, but this is the beginnings of reviewing it. The conclusion, again, the North Tioga and Sear Street parcels can easily support a new building of sufficient size to meet the county's needs. So whether it was a 37 or a 46,000 square foot building, we feel that it could fit on the parcel. It does have additional parking and residential options, as you saw, and we can financially support the project as part of our capital plan. Just the timeline. Today's the presentation. We have a joint budget F&I meeting on April 10th to talk a little bit more. By that time, you will all have had the study. Again, this is a good basic overview. There's nothing detailed in there that I haven't talked about. And then a final decision to purchase the property would be April 16th. I'm happy to take any questions.
All right. No, I don't think there are any questions. We're good. We're ready to vote. Sean and then Mike Lane.
Jason, I just want to say thank you for doing these presentations. I know you've probably done them a dozen times, and you keep adding different scenarios, which makes it that much harder to make a decision for us. So thanks for that.
I'm here to help.
Also, I see this as a real opportunity for us to have the space for the center of government that we've all been talking about for so many years. I also think, as far as parking goes, that it would allow for that as well. So I will be voting to purchase the property. The one question that I have is actually, could you go down and do a basement for the parking?
I think we talked about that, and I think that change, I don't know that it was physically possible, but I know it definitely changes your cost spectrum significantly. Underground parking brings a whole different element of issues into it, and I don't know that the grounds and the soils were really accommodating to do it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Also, I don't know how much you would gain out of it square footage-wise.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike Lane and then Deborah.
Jason, I just want to underscore, it's my understanding that our only decision that we'll be making this month is whether or not to purchase the property.
Correct.
It's not making any decision about any of these scenarios.
Right. It's a good point to bring up, Mike, yes. So the decision is to purchase the property. After doing this review, we feel that the property could accommodate the square footage that we've talked about. If you purchase the property, we would probably then come back to you shortly thereafter and outline a little bit of a timeline of series of decisions that would have to be made. First being that when you take title to the property, you're now a landlord with some tenants and some other responsibilities that we would then want to mull over as to what do you do with that, and then the questions of what scenarios and how to go forward. I mean, so what we would try to do is come back to you probably within a month or so and say, all right, here are some milestone decisions you'll have to make over the course of the next few months. But, yes, this is just about purchasing the property.
Okay, Deborah, Annie, Anna, Amanda, and then me. Deborah?
So I really appreciate all the work you've done on this. We've got a serious shortage of parking. I think one of the main reasons a lot of us were very excited about this opportunity was that we saw this as an option for alleviating some parking problems. When we start talking about scenarios 9 and 10, we're talking about adding more employees and assuming that we accommodate the interests and desires of the city and the residents on Sears Street, we're not adding many more parking spaces than we are adding employees in this center of government. I find that concerning in no small part because I know that the city's about to take the Green Street Garage offline for a while. And I hear rumors about the Seneca Street Garage. And I'm kind of wondering, since George is here, I don't mean to put you too much on the spot, but what's the plan in the, say, next 5 years about Green Street, and or not Green Street, but the Seneca Street Garage?
I don't know the timeline, but they're looking about...
Can you be given the microphone?
Hey. Stay there, George. Anna's going to bring you the mic. Stretch that. Does it work?
Yeah. Sounds like it.
I'll make it work. It's a wonderful...
Thanks, Anna.
Good. Thank you.
I can't answer about the timeline, but all the garages need to be repaired eventually. And Seneca Street's in a lot better shape than Green Street.
Which Green isn't saying much. I mean, no, I'm sorry.
There's talk about what could be done on that property, on the Seneca Street garage property, including perhaps a better bus terminal. But it's really early days. I don't think I could tell you that something's, that they're going to knock it down in 5 years. I don't know, but it's early days.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and the meeting that Jason and I have with Savante and Dan Kogan every other month, yeah. We ask that. They're clear. They're totally not taking two garages out of commission at once. They will not touch Seneca until Green is done and ready and open.
But even one is going to be
that's
a crunch,
right,
across the board downtown.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jason.
I just had one observation. Is even if you did the Center for Government, you're not, unless you moved workforce, Tompkins workforce over, you wouldn't be adding any new staff per se, anything of significance, because they're all still here. They're using the downtown, the court, old jail complex parking, and they would still have access to this parking over here. They would just, the office would be just around the block. So unless you were to bring that new office over, like the Tompkins workforce over, you wouldn't necessarily be adding new people. You just would be putting them in one central location. Sure, OHR is, separated and assigned councils, but that's not a whole lot of additional vehicles, my point is. So, it may seem like you're bringing new offices together, they're technically still used. They're currently using this location now. You're just putting them all into one spot. So they would still have access to, my point is, they still have access to this old jail complex area.
I think George wanted to add something else.
I think you answered. I will say that, and this is really tentative, but the city is looking for surface parking lot possibilities in the near West End, I'll say, particularly for when Green Street gets redone.
And they're undergoing a study, a comprehensive parking study right now. I got Annie, Anna, Amanda, me, and then Mike Sigler.
Thank you, Jason, for your presentation and for the work that you and Jay and everybody else has done on this, including your many presentations. So first off, it looks like from the preliminary figures that we won't need to raise taxes for this building, preliminarily.
That's correct.
Okay. And I think you mentioned, maybe I heard this wrong, if we went up to fourth floor, that it would change the number of windows that people had?
No. This scenario here, so if I look at this scenario, the building is actually, you see the blue area there, the blue shaded area. That's the whole building. So it's a larger floor plan, which means you now have more internal space. So there's possibilities
because
possibilities of offices without windows. You see where this is less.
Okay.
Yeah.
So not because of the building up, but because of building out. Okay.
Yeah.
And so as far as parking, looking at the picture that I took, so you don't have to go back. It looks like every scenario we're going to have a greater percentage parking. But if we're workforce, starting out with, currently we have 0.59 per full-time equivalent person. So if workforce development was brought over here, then that would be, that's not accounted for in
that's
there?
Scenario 10. It is accounted for.
That is accounted for with the 15 extra folks.
Right.
Okay. So even then, we'd still have a greater percentage of parking.
Yes, under the parking residential scenarios as they've been laid out. Like I said, those are interchangeable. Okay. And that would change, you know, it's impossible to create, to show you all the options because, you know, it's just there's a lot of different scenarios.
Right, and it depends on how much was divided off on Sears Street.
Right, too. Exactly.
Okay. Yep. And also wanted to thank you for bringing in the numbers for net zero because it was less than I thought it was going to be.
So. When you start at lead silver as your base, it's, you know, it's a lot different than starting at the minimum energy code standard.
Thank you.
Anna.
So a few questions. If one of them is if individual homes, we had talked to INHS about the different scenarios, the individual homes versus the townhomes versus
sure.
duplexes. In the discussion that you had with them, one of the things that has been brought up a lot by community members is the desire for affordable housing,
yep.
So that we don't continue the gentrification process of the city. In your discussion, did they feel that even the individual homes, I know that they said the townhomes they felt could be affordable. Did they feel that if individual homes were chosen, that they could also be made affordable?
When we had the discussion, we only discussed affordable housing options.
So all of them were?
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm trying to figure out.
Let me just double check. Katie, is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Right. Although they've been looking into duplexes, I understand that's a real interest.
We added the duplex option because they asked to see what it would look like and if it could be done. So we created it based off of our conversation to see is it an option.
Right.
So.
And I'm, like everybody else, trying to figure out the parking. So right now, the people that we have downtown in the various leased places, you're saying they already use the parking that's here outside.
So the lease spaces, so everyone in, let's say, the old jail, everyone in this building, everyone in the courthouse, anyone in Annex C, all fight for spaces in this complex area. So you have roughly, including legislators, roughly like 110 people that drive to work every day, give or take, and you have 65 spaces. So every given day, you're coming up short. Assigned council and OHR are small additions to that, so that really doesn't have a huge impact on it. But right now, the bottom line is you don't have a one-for-one ratio.
Right.
So there's always someone that's either parking on the side streets or paying for parking, sometimes getting a parking ticket and helping the city out. You know, that happens every once in a while.
So moving and getting those spaces, moving all of those, the center of government,
yeah.
to Tioga, what were the... one question would be, is it possible, given the square footage, that all of the departments that are currently leasing, is there enough square footage in the old jail to move all of them out of the leasing, or would we still have to do some leasing? I mean, ideally, we would just not lease anymore, and we could figure out
right.
how a true center of government where everybody's housed.
So when in options 9 and 10, you're taking everyone out of lease space. So let's just say, for example, the one department you'll never we didn't touch at all is the DMV. So the DMV leases space.
Okay.
They'll always. This is not part of this discussion.
Okay.
The four leasing options would be the Office of Human Rights with any of these options could move out. The Signed Council with any of these options would move out, and Hanshaw Row storage of a Board of Elections equipment would move out. So those three lease options in any one of these scenarios would no longer be leased. They would be fitting into the new building one way or another. With building 9 and 10, if we were to vacate the old jail, you can open the discussion about Tompkins Workforce Career Center, and then they would no longer lease.
In addition to all the others?
Yes. Yep.
And does those scenarios include the clerk moving out of the basement?
Yes. That's actually the first thing that's got to go.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
Amanda? Well, Anna just asked one of my questions about the clerk, so that's good to know. And then my other question was, if that was the case, would the entire workforce center move to the old jail?
Yeah.
And then there might be extra space, you said.
It's possible.
Possible.
Yeah, and if they didn't, I mean, it's not a huge impact financially if they don't move. And it's okay to have I've said it's okay to have a little extra space for what you may need it for. You don't know.
Right, absolutely. And then my only other comment was just what would be important to me in building an entirely new building would be that it would be net zero, and that would be how we would be have a model government is by doing that. And I would urge my colleagues to make that a priority as well.
Thanks, Amanda. I got a couple of questions. Just want to make a point that for the housing, you were talking about INHS, you're talking to INHS and the IURA.
Yes. And the city. We had a joint meeting with them a little while back.
Okay.
They were all part of the discussion.
Once we make the decision and debate and negotiate or whatever of on selling it, it's up to them to figure out what gets built, right?
Yes.
I mean, we might say we like this or that flavor better, but it's really up to the whichever entity buys it and they develop it for, we can say affordable housing. Clearly, if it's INHS, that's what they're going to do. Okay. Question about the old jail boiler room. You said you'd still do the boiler room, and that seems like that was a big ticket on the whole project, isn't it?
Not that big. I mean, it wasn't $1 million. But you've got an issue with the old boilers there, and waiting is just going to cost you more money to get them out in the long run. I think we felt that if you were going to do an improvement, a substantial, I mean, you're going to do a decent improvement to the building either way, you should get those out of there now. I mean, there's a little bit of a hazard with them there, and I don't think they're not, it would be the right thing to do is to get them out now. You don't have to, obviously, and I don't know the exact numbers for it, but I don't know if it would have a huge impact on the overall size of this project. I don't want to say what the number is. It just wasn't anything that struck me as overly significant to say, well, maybe we should check that.
Okay.
Changing the height of the ceiling, just moving them out.
Just moving them out, right, correct, yes.
Oh, just moving them out, not redoing the whole room.
No. In all of these scenarios, we took out the refinishing of the basement into a conference room space. We took that all out. We just said, let's take the boilers out.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
That's why it was less than the $2.4 million that was initially scoped out, because we reduced the size of the project to eliminate the conference room being put in the basement, because you would have multiple other options if you were to do any one of these scenarios.
I got it. Okay. Notice we've all jumped to designing the new, wallpaper. So
I didn't think that would happen tonight.
Yeah, I know. but I want to check in. You said you slipped in there that planning has adjacency issues with synergies with assessment.
Sure.
You slipped in there renovating the first floor of this building. So
yes.
That sounds like they've now joined the party, right?
Everybody did, yes. It would all be in one building.
Everybody but us joined the party. Okay.
In the nine and ten scenario, it actually put the possibility of taking the clerk of the ledge and putting them downstairs, and then also having an additional community conference room for the second half of the first floor.
Okay.
So that is an option or not an option. That's not a huge significant piece of the cost of the project, but it's something that's on.
Okay, and then so that again, I'm looking at the map here. So that really does. If we're stuck over here, if we're still over here, that really suggests that you would want a western entrance to the building itself and a pass through on Sears, so that it seems like that would just make our adjacency to all these other departments more comfortable.
That's something that's easily doable.
Right. As I said, we're designing the wallpaper.
We asked Kathy if she wanted to come over with us, but she didn't. She didn't want
to. She didn't want to be part of the fray.
She wanted to be part of the team.
Just one more thing. I think we should recognize that, especially an office as big as workforce with as much public in and out, they're right now right next to parking, the city parking lot. If we bring them over here, is that going to have a lot of impact on the neighborhood? So, I'm not saying yes or no to something. I just think that's an issue we should really pay attention to So
none of these scenarios are contingent upon workforce moving over. The only reason I've been very selective is it opens the discussion for them.
I understand.
We understand that. I know the employees have challenges with parking because they've either got to pay for parking or they can't get parking.
Right.
That may change this for them. The question about their customer and are their customer using public transportation? Are they not using public transportation? All those are parts that I would imagine if that were to happen, that would be part of the discussion. And the layout can be difficult. So is the layout conducive to meet their need too?
All right.
But it does open the discussion for it.
Right. And I really appreciate this open-ended thinking. I think this, you know, the whole team, it seems like you've really come up with some interesting creative ideas, and just it's important. This is the kind of thing you don't do very often.
One thing I think that will come out, if you were to move forward with say a 9 or 10 option, that it's a little bit, we started to look at it a little bit as when we got together for that one meeting. What became obvious is that you have some public interfacing departments, I would say would probably cause us to sit down strategically and talk about the different types of public interface we have, and can you have a central floor or a central office that people can come in and get access to each one of those services without going up and down floors? Is there the ability to overlap that way or not? It may be able to happen with most of it. It may not be, but it would allow kind of a one-stop shop type opportunity. So if someone needed to come there to pay their taxes, needed to address an exemption issue with the assessment, or needed to deal with something, file something with the clerk's office, it can all happen at literally one stop. You know, that would probably be the next discussion to take on. Can it happen? And if so, what would it look like?
All right, thank you very much. Mike Sigler and then Shauna.
I just had two questions. I mean, just from what you've been explaining, it almost sounds like we're moving almost everybody into this building. I mean, it almost sounds like we have more space there than we need.
In the building itself?
What's being envisioned right now?
I think it probably meets your need. It meets your need, and then it provides, you know, every department's square footage needs allowed for a little small percentage of growth. And the 47 or the 46,000 square feet meets those needs. You may get some economy of scale benefit with, you know, all right, so these departments separately had separate conference rooms. Maybe there's a joint conference room that can be gained out of it. You know, those types of things haven't been worked out, and you still might be able to gain some synergies out of it. Will it drastically change the footprint of the building? I don't think so. Will it drastically change the square footage? Maybe 1,000 or two, but I don't know if it'll be significant.
Just so I'm clear, though, it's like the clerk, assessment,
yeah.
Board of Elections, just the machines or the whole Board of Elections?
Board of Elections and machines. And there's a little logic behind that as well, but I can come back to it.
Administration.
Yes.
I guess my question, though, is, like, the administration building, that's already paid for. It's not going anywhere. We have it.
Right.
Why? And it's like the clerk's office. I understand why we want to move that out, but that space too is kind of free for us. I mean, we already have to maintain the building. Why, we're giving up a lot of space to the state, and we're not getting anything in return from the state. It just seems like we're moving out of space that we've already owned.
If you were to have the third judge, you will have to free up space in that building.
And the courthouse.
Yes, and if it came down to the DA or the clerk that had to leave, I would say we would lean towards the clerk getting out.
Right.
So finding space for the clerk is the next solution. One of the challenges with the county administration building is its limited flexibility. It's not a square. It's a very narrow rectangle, right? So you can only cut out the space so many ways to make it work. And under its current number of departments that are currently located in there, if you were to invest in renovating the building, you wouldn't keep four departments in there. You would move one of them out just because the third floor, for example, is jammed. You know, I've got 10 people, 11 people jammed into spaces that were that were once filled by six or seven.
Right.
So that then creates, you know, this is like the furniture on the Titanic shuffling them around, and you're just not getting where sometimes. So where does the county attorney go then if you expand it out, right? And then, you know, if the attorney goes downstairs, well, where does finance go? And then the finance goes over there, well, what type of synergy? Yeah.
Right.
You know, finance talks with HR a lot. Why? Because every other week we have to pay people. Payroll becomes an issue in conflict. And then, you know, so we went down this. This is why I said that meeting that we had with everybody, nobody left liking anybody. Because, you know, you were pushing this way and pushing that way. So it became obvious that if you really wanted to look for optimal service and synergy amongst the departments, having them in one location was the best opportunity, and the location could accommodate it.
And I think that the DA have to recognize that the DA is in terrible space that it's not remotely adequate either, the grand jury room. So, yeah, these are things that are technically functioning, but really not well.
State, I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying if we're giving up space to the state, because they're going to take over the space, it's kind of like we're giving up square footage for nothing kind of thing. You know?
We're getting a court.
Yeah.
The whole idea is we're going to get a court.
Well, if they give it, yeah.
I think we're going to get a court. No, but even so, the DA needs adequate space. We've long wanted to get the clerk out from behind a security wall so that people can just walk in for a passport or not driver's license, for whatever, all their business. So it's more user-friendly. I think it's good to, you know, keep testing these assumptions, but the dominoes have to fall. I think we have the opportunity to do this, and I think it's absolutely well worth it. As we're going to work out the details and figure out the best combination of things, but I think starting with the courthouse makes a ton of sense. Remember that by moving here from over there, we saved millions of dollars. They could have asked us to build a new courthouse. And we could have essentially lost that negotiation. But by accommodating the court that was here in our space and moving over, we reused a space that was never going to be used for anything else. And that's why we're here, and we are here, and we're going to stay here because this room, there's nothing. What else can you do with this room? So it's a set of dominoes that really, I think, makes sense in the long run. Okay, I've got Shauna, Henry, Anna, and then Annie.
I think one thing that's going to be really important with the parking is some enforcement because Annie went out one day a few weeks ago, and out of the 65 spots, I believe 10 were not labeled as employees. Is that correct, Annie?
There's a couple of us that have done little surveys, and on an ongoing basis, there's 6 to 8 cars parked there that are not county or courthouse employees.
Yeah. And so I think even on a best-case scenario where we're looking at a one employee to one parking spot, if we're not doing the enforcement, then those numbers are really flawed. I mean, we have to either get gates or cards or something so that the community is not parking in employee parking spots, especially if we're inviting more community members to the center of government.
So I think everybody knows the steps that Jason's already started to take, and that's happening right now. Okay. Henry?
What's the agreement that we have with the state court employees regarding parking?
So I don't know that there's a formal written agreement, but we have a certain amount of spaces that have to be dedicated to them. I don't know the number off the top of my head. And then there's a certain amount of spaces that they have access to prior to a certain point in time in the morning. I can get you more details to what that is, but there's an arrangement that we have to have with them to provide parking for their employees.
And don't you think they're going to want to change that arrangement?
Absolutely. Yeah, there is no two-way street in the arrangements with the courts. Yeah. It's pretty much one way, and it's their way.
Arel, is there any? Arel? Do you have any more? You manage the building. Do you know anything more about the parking in the state? Do we have an agreement with the state on parking?
have a microphone.
All right, you've gone too far. You need to come to the mic. A quick yes or no is we do off mic, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there's a formal agreement regarding the parking. I know there is a formal agreement regarding the building itself and what we're required to provide space. And I know that I talked to county attorney. We tried to see if there was some type of arrangement. We're not aware of it. I did put in a call to the state office in Binghamton to see if they have some type of agreement that we could refer to. But I know the 25 years I've been here, we've had to provide them space. That parking, those parking spaces have not changed as far as the quantity of spaces. But I know as we're looking in the future, because they have a master space plan for additional space in the courthouse, that if we were to proceed with that, that they would require additional parking spaces.
For current staff?
For staff that they're bringing into the courthouse. So let's say if we bring in the third judge, there may be a requirement that we provide spaces to those additional state employees.
Okay. But you're not going to renegotiate unless we get the third judge. You're not
correct.
Talking about...
Okay. Correct, correct.
Okay. All right. We're going to keep working on it. Okay. Thanks, Harrell. Appreciate it.
Can I also ask another question?
Yeah.
When you, if you subdivide the property and sell off the property to INS, H, Euro, what would be the, you'll be selling it at fair market value?
Yes. Yep. We'd have Jay or an appraiser come and do an appraisal of it.
Okay.
Yep. Anna and then Annie.
Just switching gears for one second. I know we all love parking, but I figured I'd give you a little bit of a break, Jason, for just
okay.
a second. I'm sure we'll get back to it.
All right.
I was curious in the assessment that you have done if ground source heating, if there was an evaluation in that, that's something that's feasible on this lot?
I believe it was as part of the plat. You know, yes, it was labeled under one of the.
It's labeled, here. But as there's been, I know there was a discussion of a soil analysis, water
yes.
table.
So there was a geotechnical review as well as an environmental phase one, and none of it suggests that it can't happen.
Okay.
At least at this stage of the process.
It's good enough for now. Thank you.
Annie?
Thank you. I just want to. Just a comment because some folks have been talking about the amount of space over there and going with you and other folks and taking tours of the different departments that we're talking about moving over there. I mean, people are, they just keep, we just keep cramming in one more person, and it's really hard to go talk to somebody and without five other people turning around and hearing the conversation, so you can't have a private conversation, and they can't have a phone call. I mean, they're literally in some of the departments next door. They're right on top of each other. And to do a good job in the county to provide good services and to provide additional services, as, for instance, we're hiring somebody to work with Veterans Services. I'm not sure where they're going to go. I think they might go to
COFA.
But we want to provide better services, and so we keep adding people, and there is no place to go. I mean, I have trouble with noise, and I could not work in most of those places next door with four other people right on top of you. So, and then I just also want to echo what Amanda Champion said about the net zero, that I'm really hoping that we can go to net zero and have a model government building. So thank you.
Dave McKenna.
Yeah, Jason, did you have, what was the contingency number you built into those figures?
It ranged, but I want to say you were between 20 and 30%, depending on what, you know. So, for example, design might have a little different contingency than new construction, which might have a different contingency than renovating of existing space. Arel, did you take a, am I right, around the 20 to 30%, depending on the issue? So you've got some decent contingency in there.
Okay. Seems to me that you covered most of the topics that I asked you to cover when we had our meeting a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And I think you did a pretty good job on it, frankly. And I think the building scenario where everybody's in one spot makes the most sense from my point of view, especially since we can offset the cost with a reasonable bonding issue. And I don't know, that scenario looks good to me, whichever one you guys choose.
Rick said we could do it, so I got his sign off on it. Now, I think, you know, the question is, so, you know, the one of the questions we look at with this is to a certain extent a generational investment. I mean, you're talking about building a building for more than 30 years. It's probably a 40, 50-year-old building. In that context, you know, you haven't done any major renovations to the old jail in the last 20 years or so. So you're due for something substantial in the near future. You're going to have to find a solution for the county clerk. So you're either going to lease space or buy a current space or build a space somewhere for the county clerk. That's going to happen. And then at that point, you know, you're going to have to put a substantial amount of investment into Building C. Both Building C and the old jail are probably Building C more than the old jail is in dire need of improvement. So if you're at a point where you have these buildings that you need to invest in, if you can surplus them or put modest investment, but be able to improve the efficiency of the operations and make a long-term investment, I think it warrants a good look and a good consideration. I will say that most likely the cost will never go down. It probably will only go up. So whether we address it this year, if it gives you any bit of comfort, I looked back at the Center for Government research from before, and they had estimated a 49,000 square foot building. Keep in mind that it assumed legislative chambers, didn't assume the storage of the elections equipment, and I'll come back to that in a second. So you're roughly around the same square footage, and your pricing isn't far off too far off either. So, we've done some confirmation to see if we were on point with things. I will come back to the Board of Elections equipment. One of the things in discussing with the Board of Elections is the challenge they have in calibrating the equipment and working on the machines when they're located up at Hanshaw Road, meaning coming back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It's not an effective way of doing it. Particularly when they work on them, in groups. Being able to provide a space, because the space they use up there is about 3,200 square feet, they also use it for training space. Being able to have that in the same building where if they need something, they can go to the office, which would be right upstairs. We talked about basement concerns, making sure it's floodproof and waterproof and everything else proof, and understanding that would be the case. There's security measures that would have to be put in place. You'd have a freight elevator there that would have some redundancies. But the attraction of being able to have the equipment right there, putting it on the first floor is not prime space. Obviously, that's prime space. That's where you wouldn't put it. Putting it on second or third floors would be a little more challenging. So that was the reasoning for bringing that, into the basement, is the ability to improve the way they go about upgrading or working on the machines.
Now, being that I used to work for Board of Elections, I know exactly what you're saying.
Okay, sorry.
it is an issue at times. So I think that's actually a good thing, and I'd never considered the workforce portion of it, but that's a way to fill up the building that you're going to vacate.
Possible.
Or at least a good share of it. So, I mean, I think it makes good sense all the way around.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike Lane.
Just two things that for anybody who doesn't understand the relationship with the state, those employees, we can't just say, you got to give us more.
No.
There was a statewide agreement under state legislation. What was it, in the late 60s, early 70s?
Wow, there.
In which the state of New York took over the cost of all the employees in the state court systems, and they pay that. Now, those used to be county employees, many of them. And the quid pro quo for that was that the counties would agree to provide the facilities for those people. I see Ralph's nodding his head, so I think I got it right here. And so if they come to us and say, we want to put in a new office for the law guardians or some future thing that some state legislation comes up with, we have to provide that. And Martha's exactly right. They could come to us and say, if you haven't got room here, you got to build us a new building. I remember Joe Mariana always used to say when we moved over here that we got evicted by our own tenant because they wanted to take over our chambers in the legislature, or rather in the main courthouse, so they could build another courtroom because they didn't want to have to bring the judges over to this courtroom, which was what was here before these chambers now. And the other point I want to make is that with respect to the housing on Sears Street, if we did allow one or two up there, we could still continue to own the land, much as INHS often owns the land, and let there be an owner-occupied house on the property.
So that'll be, Jason's thinking. So, I mean, that's one of the options, right? I mean, we could look at that if that's a housing trust kind of idea.
We look at that with the old library.
I can't say no.
So, again, the decision in front of us this month is, can we accommodate well enough the range of things here? Did I see another hand over there? Dave.
Yeah, I was just going to add to what Mike said. They would have had to have two secure buildings if they were going to use this as a courtroom,
right.
Which would have further complicated issues.
And I would point out that after this was all done, Judge Mulvey came over here. You remember, Mike? And he looked around and he said, huh, well, I think I got the short end of the deal. Loved what we'd done with it. That's right.
Yeah, exactly what you asked for.
Yes. I'm also wondering, if we build a garage door for the first floor, how many cars could we fit under this room? I don't know. Mike and then Anna.
I'm just wondering. I'm just trying to figure a scale. I mean, do we have anything comparable? Like, is there a building out there that's 47,000 square feet that's in place?
I'm sure we can refer you to one. Mental health? But not as tall.
Mental health is 45,000.
Okay. So but it's six floors.
That's six floors. This would be three or four. Is there anything three or four?
Squatter.
Four, that would be 43.
How about health?
What is public health?
33. Yeah. That's kind of an odd-shaped building, but.
Anna?
Thank you, by the way, for all of your work. This has been an incredible amount of work for all of you. I really appreciate it. I wanted to, after all of this, say that I am also in support of purchasing this. I will vote for it. I have heard from a lot of constituents, as has Rich, about housing. I have some people saying put as much parking as possible so that I don't have people parking in front of my house. I don't think that us pulling off the streets is going to actually free up, given how many people are parking in the city. From Cornell and from downtown, but I would like to see one of the scenarios that does have housing. We have such a tremendous need for housing downtown. The number 10 that you have, that one had 0.72, I think, for parking. And then the three houses you said would need a variance. Were those tiny homes? I know that, Dan, you wanted him to look at alternatives. I think this scenario might have been in response to some of the emails that Dan sent. Is that in response to that, or those?
I couldn't tell you the size of the home. I would tell you that the lot itself doesn't meet the minimum requirement. So, you know, when you get into details like that, that may change the number of units based on the size of the home. You know, if you're going to get into variances, that's a city issue in terms of area variances. And if you started to get into tiny construction, you know, you might be able to fit more than five or six units here. I don't know the answer to those questions. We didn't get that detail.
But the variance was for the lot, not for the – okay. That
right,
helps.
For the lot.
So you could still fit a normal-sized home on the lot. The lot's just smaller. It would have
–
okay.
Yep.
So it wouldn't fit necessarily into the zoning.
Right. The lot size itself was smaller than the minimum requirement.
Got it. Thank you.
Deborah, and then maybe we can wrap up.
Yeah, the houses on those lots look about the same size, Anna. It's just that they don't have off-street parking.
So those houses, remember, if those houses would not be conforming to the existing zoning code if they were built today, because it was a time when there was a different zoning code, very typical of older cities. You know, you've got, you know, they're crunched together, they're closer to the lot line. You know, you wouldn't be able to build a house like that without a series of variances today. So, it, you know, it would actually be somewhat similar to the character of it, but, again, it's not consistent with the zoning code.
So, Jason, Amanda?
How many trees can we plant in the parking lot?
I don't know, but I can tell you we can look at a green roof option.
You said there was going to be a joint budget and F&I meeting on April 10th. Do you have the time?
I think it's 4 o'clock. And at that meeting, you'll have three resolutions presented to them. Resolution with the balancing the public interest, right? Public interest test, seeker, and then resolution to purchase. And then just exercise the option to purchase, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, exercise the option.
Mike?
Can we make sure those proposed resolutions go to everybody? Yep. Ahead of that joint meeting?
I think tomorrow morning or tonight they'll be loaded up into the Minitrack system. I think it's already there, ready to just be there.
Everybody gets those agendas.
Right.
So just to make sure that everybody gets those.
Well, and the three resolutions will be included on the next legislature meeting, and that'll go out next Wednesday prior to the joint meeting.
Joint meeting's on Thursday.
They'll be pending committee action.
All right. Then the meeting is next.
For the meeting on the 10th, I'm talking about.
Right, so that's going to go out soon because a week from the 10th is Thursday, right? Is tomorrow?
True.
So if just everybody gets that email, that'd be great.
Yes.
Okay. All right. This has been a really rich and very helpful discussion. You said the economic analysis is going to be ready Thursday also?
Right. So what will be ready for Thursday is the full feasibility study that Hull has done. There's additional supplements to it. You know, it's like a few hundred pages, so we might not send you the supplements, which aren't really relevant. There's nothing out, you know, nothing came of the environmental review, nothing came of the geotechnical review. So if you want them, we can send them, but we probably won't via email, but they're available. The substance of the Hull study is maybe 30 pages. And then a cover memo by myself and the team will be on top of it, which summarizes all of this. The one thing that we didn't talk about, and it's just a little bit of a kind of a development analysis. It talks about the tax base review. Some of the discussion has been taking property off the tax rolls. And we did a little bit of a tax analysis in terms of if we were to take this off the tax rolls, put Annex C back on the tax rolls, and it were to be redeveloped to its maximum use, what would that mean net gain-wise? We go through that. We also threw a little bit of interest in there saying, well, what happens if now that whole corner, the bank and then the other professional building just to north of the bank were to be bought and redeveloped, and what would that add value to? So, you know, just to kind of give a little bit of a sneak peek of what could come of it if this were to happen, you know, and what the tax benefit would be, because I know that's been a concern, as it should be. You're taking property off the tax rolls. We want to make sure, in this case, we're putting it back on and with the option. So that's in there. We didn't cover it. But I would like just to say that, you know, to thank the team that's really worked on this. They really did the brunt of the work. I'm just the window dressing for this. So they really did a great job. Jay did a wonderful job organizing everyone in communication with the consultants. They really did outstanding work. So they really deserve a lot of the thanks for everything they've done.
So just a really important question. One more.
Yes.
Do y'all like each other better now? Is that, I mean, did you fix that up?
Jonathan has started to warm up to me a little bit more. He didn't talk to me for about 24 hours afterwards. No, it was fun. It was interesting because, you know, you really started to get the sense. Everybody was in the room. There's like, 15 of us there. And you really started to get the sense of two things. One, the way we were going about it, you know, it just wasn't all fitting together. And two, what really came together, at least from my perspective, and I'll let them speak for themselves, is, you know, all of a sudden Maureen says, you know, and they always, you know, I always send them over to Jay, or Jay always sends them over to Maureen, and he really started to see the interaction that took place and the overlap of service delivery. And that's where we started to talk about, you know, who has public-facing units and why and what are they doing and is there a better way to approach it so it's not scattered.
So. And I think that's also I would say an implicit value of this government is that people collaborate. That's why we have so many and need more meeting rooms. is that the departments work together and there's collegiality. I think that really has meaningful impact on what the public receives from our employees as well. So, all right, with all that, thank you all very much. Appreciate everybody's hard work on this. It looks like we have a lot of information. Could I ask that we each of us gets a hard copy of this economic analysis and your memo? That'd be helpful.
We'll get the memo with the feasibility study, and we'll also send out this presentation.
Great. Well, hard copy would be great too.
Hard copy.
Yeah, I think okay. A lot of us would appreciate just having that, along with the slides from tonight.
We'll do.
All right. With that, I'm going to ask for a recess for 10 minutes. Let's all be back in our seats at 8 o'clock. Thank you very much. We are back in session. I think we are up to the report by the county administrator, because that all was not a report by the county administrator. Where'd Jason go? All right, Jason is, we are back. Mike Lane.
I'd like to move we go into executive session regarding real estate only. And if after that someone wants to move to go to executive session regarding a personnel issue, then they can do that.
Is motion to go into executive session for real estate only and to do a personnel issue at a later part of the meeting. Is there a second for that? Second? All right, all in favor, please raise your hands.
Discussion?
Discussion? All right, discussion. We don't usually discuss. Discussion. Dan?
Are we going out of order on the agenda? I wasn't sure if that was your intention. We haven't done the...
Right. We haven't done anything.
I just wasn't sure your intention, Mike.
Exactly so.
Okay.
That's what I would move. I was moving at the wrong point, and I apologize for that.
You're not moving it now. You said you're not moving it now.
No, I won't move it now.
Withdrawing.
Okay. County Attorney Jason Molino.
I'm not the county attorney. I was promoted.
I don't know.
Is that a promotion?
Is that a demotion or a promotion?
I don't know what that was. It depends on the day.
They're not only talking, they've melted.
County Administrator Jason Molino.
Oh, man. So I gave you some propaganda in your desks in the red folder. One is the 2019-20 enacted budget, hot off the press, of the state's adopted budget. And I also gave you kind of a cheat sheet from NYSAC about a county impact summary. I will tell you, I reached out to all the department heads, said, hey, give me some updates as to what's going on. A lot of the feedback I got is we don't know everything. We're not clear on a lot of stuff. But that's what I would expect the day after.
Can we quote you on that?
Yes, you can call me on. I don't know a lot right now. We're working on it.
On a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. And we're trying to a lot of stuff. That's a county administrator term. And we're trying to figure out what's going on and the impact of the stuff. So I can give you a little bit of an overview, some things that you want to know about.
Excuse me, Jason.
Yes.
We have this. You said something else?
This was also sent around. It might be stuck at Mike's section. Did you get this, Mike?
It's the summary.
That wasn't something I brought, no.
Well, I passed it around.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Sorry.
Once the report
comes, yes.
Everybody else has it?
Yes. I can send another one out if you want. I'm not going to go through everything point by point. I'll tell you voting reforms, about $10 million for early voting operations, $14.7 million for electric polling books. Polling hours changed a little bit for primaries from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And also employees are granted 3 hours paid time off to vote. Confirmed with the Board of Elections. I don't know quite how the money is going to be dispersed yet, but when they know, they'll let us know. There was bail reform, speedy trial and discovery. Bail reform, primarily no cash bail for misdemeanors, non-violent felonies. Lance Salisbury has been keeping, I know Martha and Rich John and myself, up to date, I say almost momentarily, as things have changed throughout the past several days. Short end of it is there's more to be rolled out. He thinks, though, that it will definitely contribute to the alternatives to incarceration initiatives that we put forward. It will hopefully contribute to less jail population. It's hard to monetize it right now. It may also result in less attorney travel time and jail time for the attorneys due to not putting folks in jail. So he's going to have more summary as to what it means with some of the other elements that have not yet been refined yet.
AMAID, big issue over AMAID this year, aid incentives to municipalities. That $60 million was taken out by the governor for towns and villages. It hasn't quite been put back in the same way. Essentially what it is it's been restored and off the county shoulders. However, the state is going to hold a certain amount of money every year and distribute it once the sales tax, or if I'm understanding, the revenue comes in to fully reimburse the lost AMAID to the municipality. So they're not going to get it up front. It's some type of holding and then reimbursing mechanism that the state is going to manage. It's very unclear as to how this will work. So I would expect NYSAC, that'll be one of the first things when they understand, will be released out. But as you can see here, if you read this summary, basically AIM with communities that receive less than 2% of their expenditures. Counties will not be required to make direct payments to the towns and villages, but the state will withhold county sales tax beginning in June in a sufficient amount to fully reimburse lost AIM payments to the impacted towns and villages. I don't quite know how that's going to work out. I believe that's tied into the internet sales tax piece of sales tax.
They did pass the internet sales?
They did pass the internet sales tax.
Is that starting in June?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say when it's starting.
Deborah?
I fail to see how this is an improvement over the original proposal. Instead of us having to directly pay it to the towns and villages, the state's going to take it from us, and they're going to pay it to the towns and villages.
Like I said,
how are we better off?
Well, you're not. I didn't say you were better off. I just said that this is what it's changed into. Essentially, it's coming from, my understanding is it's coming from sales tax revenue generated from internet sales, which we currently don't receive.
All right. So, okay. And then in addition,
I will say, however, there are a few counties that probably will receive less internet sales tax than actual AIM payments. We are not one of them.
Okay. But then, so we also can expect to have some internet sales tax income as well as the ESCO?
Possibly.
Sales tax income?
Yes. Yeah,
that will make up for the internet sales tax income that they're taking away to give to the municipal.
I wouldn't say it's dollar for dollar, no. I mean, this is saying about $38 million accruing into counties before regular sales tax arrangements. That's not the same as 60. I can't say it's a dollar for dollar amount. At the end of the day, this is another
screw job.
It's not exactly. I mean, it's essentially putting a mandate of the. It's putting an unfunded mandate onto the counties one way or another. So the bottle bill was out. Legalization of adult cannabis is out. Permanent sales tax cap is in. I don't think there were any changes to it, meaning exemptions for capital or exemptions for pilots. At least I don't know at this point. There is obviously plastic bag was adopted. Banning plastic bags was adopted. One thing about plastic bags is that the ban on plastic bags adopted, I believe, effective March or April of next year. There is a local option for counties to opt in to charge a 5% fee on paper bags. If you charge it, 2% will come back to, not 2%, 2 cents. Sorry, 2 cents of the 5 cents. That's 40%. 2 cents of the 5 cents will come back to you to help pay for issuance of reusable bags. Don't know how that's going to flow yet, but we're not 100% sure, I would say we're fairly certain that you would not be able to do an additional fee on top of it. I would imagine this will precede any local law on it.
So just one flavor of the paper bag.
Yeah. You're either in or you're out.
Annie?
And the other 3 cents or 60% would go back to the state?
I believe it goes to the EFP fund, the Environmental Protection Fund. Yep. Pins, I do believe that they did not restrict the ability for foster home care for pins, although I do believe they restricted detention options. And it's not clear right now if the funding to help reimburse probation officers is included. I know Kit and Pat didn't have a conclusive answer at the end of the day, so they're continuing to work on it.
I thought that after January 1st, 2020, counties would no longer receive reimbursement.
That's for the expedited PINS reform. There's also other funding that I'm not clear if some other funding was shuffled around to be able to be accessed. That was where I was unclear about. I don't know if there's a net impact to us yet or not. I think from a treatment, from a services perspective, we were relieved that foster care was still an option for probation. There was one other thing I wanted to make sure I touched on. I don't remember it off the top of my head, but that's the gist of items that we've talked about. Again, I would expect more in a week. Maybe, you know, by the next ledge meeting, we'll have more depth as to how things are going to be rolled out. You know, the budget was just adopted yesterday, so we're still trying to figure out where things are. I will tell one thing that did come up is organics recycling. So folks, by effective January 1st of 2022, food scrap generators that generate over two tons of food scraps within a week at a single location. So, for example, our universities would be an example, supermarkets that are within 25 miles of an organic recycler required to transport them to the recycler. So this may impact between a dozen to two dozen entities. The universities, Cornell and IC would be one of them. Although I don't know that it's much of a stretch for them. I think they either have had some balls in motion or they are already there, but this is just another initiative with respect to support the organic recycling facilities and the food scrap service that you started a few years ago.
Dan, and then Henry. Leslin, did you have your hand up?
Okay. Just on that last point, look, also like school district, the high schools and such, and also our jail.
Correctional facilities, supermarkets, universities, hotels, entertainment venues, etc. Schools, I don't know, but universities are.
But our jail, yes.
It is. I don't know if it meets the criteria for scrap foods, but yes.
Thanks.
Henry?
I just wanted to say that source of income was also passed.
Yes. Yep, source of income was passed. That was it right there. Source of income was passed.
Right. I have a question about the other 3 cents for paper bags. Is there any idea whether that's going to supplant existing funds into the Environmental Protection Fund, or do you think it'll be on top of what's...
It sounds like it'll be on top of it. I can't imagine it's going to be a whole lot of additional revenue, but I would imagine it'll be on top of it. My guess is they'll probably tailor it towards similar, you know, use. It just won't go into the Environmental Protection Fund, but that's to be determined. There was nothing additional there was no additional funding for community colleges, although they did provide language that will ensure no community college shall receive less than 98% of its base aid funding that it received in the 2018-19 college fiscal year. So that's good in terms of the state can't cut its funding. The question Martha and I had earlier is it permanently the 18-19 aid or is it the prior year's aid? You know what I'm saying? So is 5 years from now, will it still be the 18-19 level or will it always be the prior year's aid? The way it's written in this document, it's hard to tell, but I'm sure we'll find out soon enough.
Well, Deb Molyneux from TC3 sent me, I asked her, and she sent a document and an email thread. I forwarded that to everybody at the end of the day. So there was a lot more information in there, but I didn't have time to look to really digest it.
Okay. I haven't looked at it either.
But they seem pretty happy.
It's a step in the right direction.
Oh. Yeah. I looked quickly, and it looked like there was a list by counties, and TC3 was going to get an additional 1.9%, I think.
Good.
Yeah.
That's all, I think, of impact. Like I said, as we know more, we'll be able to as we know more when the bills are actually drafted, and we'll have the ability to let you know what it means implementation-wise.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you for this.
I just wanted to note, Henry and I were talking about the source of income. I mean, it doesn't address some of the larger fair housing issues that we have brought up here earlier, but the other thing we noted is that there was no discussion of how they would do enforcement of testing, sending out testing. Is the state going to do that? Are they going to put that on the counties to do it? So clearly that's going to come down the pike at some point, but it could be another serious burden on the counties if they're not willing to cover those costs.
Thank you, Jason. Anything else?
That's all I have.
Thank you very much. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Just a couple things. One to follow up on the plastic bag law. As Jason says, there's a 5 cent if we want to have charge on paper bags. That's optional by county. presumably that will be by local law. Of course, the law isn't actually out yet to look at, but presumably that will be by local law. So we will put together a draft local law and bring it to the committee when that happens. It's a funny thing. The state, they pass a law, but there's no actual law to look at. So, but that's aside the point. I did leave, Lisa Holmes prepared this, a chart in each of your folders.
Get closer to the mic, please.
Yeah, I did leave a chart, which actually Lisa Holmes, and she prepared it in each of your folders. And what that is basically, as some of you know, sometimes you're approached by county employees and they may have a complaint of some nature. And we have a policy on virtually all types of complaints. For example, if they have a HIPAA complaint or if they have a discrimination complaint. And this just basically outlines what policy it is and who to steer the employee to. So it's, you know, hopefully it will be helpful. We'll also distribute it to employees. Hopefully it'll be helpful to them. You know, when people have complaints, we have policies by who they should bring their complaint to and a policy on how they'll be handled. And it's good for everybody to know that, particularly if you're approached by employees. So I just thought it'd be a good idea to get something out to you. And that's my report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Thank you. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
I just want to bring to your attention where we're at in the audits right now. We have, mentioned before that we had completed successfully two audits. We still have those two audits under our belt. We are into our third one, which is the PFC audit, and that has gone well, and we had finished that about 2 weeks ago. We're just waiting for a final report on the airport PFC audit. We just finished a field audit for the health insurance consortium last Friday. That is now in the report writing stage, and that should be finished within about a week to 10 days. And then we have the big one. The county audit starts on April 15th, and it goes through May 10th. And that will be wrapped up pretty close. The financial report should be wrapped up about 2 or 3 weeks after that. We were looking forward to bringing that finalized county audit report to you to the first meeting in July, is when we always schedule it. I think that might be put back because one of the committees right now is looking at a request to have the first meeting of the legislature canceled on July.
July 2nd.
So we'll probably bring you the completed financial report the second meeting in July. And that's all for my report tonight.
Thank you. Jason, you wanted to add something?
There was just one thing that's worth mentioning. As you know, Don Barber, who's the executive director for the consortium, has retired, and they appointed a new executive director. It is Elin Dowd, and she is leaving us from our HR department to go become the executive director. So, loss for us in our HR department, but still gain, and that we'll be dealing with her as the executive director for the healthcare consortium.
All right. That's good. That's really moving to a new level, I think. That's great.
She'll be housed. Her office will be located just across the street over the town of Ithaca's offices. She'll be over there.
Leslie.
I have a question or a couple of questions for
John. Can you pull your mic up?
And Lisa, nice chart. Thank you. But I want to go to your discrimination harassment bullet there, arrow. So if the discrimination or harassment complaint is against the Commissioner of Human Resources, where do people go?
Right. Okay, we couldn't put everything.
I know you can't put everything, but I think that's a major
here,
one.
Lisa will address that because we tried to go through and just put, you know, we couldn't put everything. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to refer people to the policy, because in almost every case there could be a conflict, because in every case who you're supposed to complain to, in every case there's a backup, but we didn't think that.
But I think there might be something that just is the backup.
Sure.
Yeah, so, and in the policy itself it will state, and Jonathan's correct, the writing just got to be a little too small. It would go to the county administration and the compliance officer, which is
company. So I would advocate for another arrow that says in the event of conflicts to county administrator and compliance officer. That's what I would advocate for. And as a legislator, I actually don't know who I go and complain to. Any of these things I complained, this is the same complaint process I follow? Yes. I've only been here for 20 years. Why the heck would I know?
You are an employee of the county, and, and you would complain just as any other employee of the county.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Sometimes I'm an employee and sometimes I'm not, depending on which day the state decides I am. All right. Thank you for that. Much appreciated. This is good.
Deborah?
I just wanted to advise whoever is in charge. I have been told that the video has not come back on since recess. So,
start over.
Did Jim heard us? The video, yes, I see nodding. He can't do anything?
He says it's okay.
What? All right. Jim's on it. Well, thanks, Deborah. Anything else for Jonathan or Rick? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's see.
If I could add one thing. Yeah. One reason I did distribute this is for comments. It's not yet been distributed to employees. So if anybody has any other comments on it, we'd appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So that's a good idea. I mean, so that whether it's an asterisk in the line at the bottom of, you know, the backup idea, sort of next, that'd be great for all of those different pieces. Thank you. That's very helpful. All right. I guess we get to go to committee reports. All right. Government operations. Mike Lane, chair.
Yes, we have not met since our last legislature meeting. We will meet this Thursday, April 4th, at 1:30 in the old jail conference room.
All right. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Deborah Dawson.
Well, I will move the motion or the resolution that I pulled off the agenda, but in terms of a committee report, I will rely on Anna because I was not here. So I don't know in what order you want to do those things, Maureen.
Go ahead and do the resolution.
Okay, so at this point, I would like to move Resolution A, Acceptance of Grants from New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services and the New York State Department of State to develop the Tompkins County Resiliency and Recovery Plan, ID 8507.
Seconded by Anna.
Okay, and the reason that I pulled this is that it was unclear on the face of the resolution what happened to $120,625 of the grants that are recited in the whereas clauses. So I don't know what the procedure is here, but I'd like to move to amend the motion to include in the resolved clause after the word budget.
So the third resolved?
Right. A comma. And then to account for grant funds not previously included in that budget or set aside for use in 2020.
That's friendly. All right. You got it, Kim? Most of it. Why don't you repeat it?
Oh, okay. Lost my page. All right. After budget in the third resolved, get rid of the semicolon or the colon and replace it with a comma. To account for grant funds not previously included in that budget or set aside for use in 2020.
Okay, does that make sense to folks? All right, any other discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. So, Anna Kellis, Vice Chair Peek, report on the committee meeting.
Well, it's pretty short. It was filmed in case anybody missed it and wanted to see it. We had a representative, a professor from Cornell, who also owns a company locally that produces hydrogen storage battery for electricity. It is very new technology. His name is Dr. Paul Mottolo. And we were particularly interested in hearing from him because one of the biggest bottleneck areas for renewable energy usage, obviously, is the ability to store the energy, particularly wind and solar. So having him come was very helpful to hear. They have developed a unit that is in and of itself a microgrid that can create hydrogen, store hydrogen, and then that can be then pumped into, say, hydrogen cars, or you can produce electricity. It can be plugged in so that it pulls the energy usage comes from the grid, and it can also be tied into solar and wind as the source of energy. So very flexible, creative. Hopefully we could use it at some point in the future here. One of the things that he did talk about was that they are looking for demonstration projects. And so that was a discussion that we had after the meeting of whether or not that was a possibility with the county, that we could be one of their demonstration projects. They are applying to the Department of Energy, and that application is due April 8th. So that was one of the points brought up, and that is in the video.
All right. Anything else? Any questions for from anyone? All right. Thank you very much. Next committee, Planning, Budget, Capital, and Personnel. Mike Lane, Chair.
Again, we haven't met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting again on April 19th at 9 o'clock a.m., and we have one resolution. It's adopting the local law for which we had the public hearing today, the best value purchasing, and I so move.
Seconded by Glenn. So just to confirm, so that you have the joint meeting on the 10th, your regular meeting is the 19th?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. All right, discussion of best value purchasing. All right, ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Is that it, Mike?
Yes.
All right, thank you very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee met on March 27th. We had a very robust meeting, lots of topics to discuss. Prior to our meeting, a subgroup met with the sheriff and undersheriff to continue the discussion around law enforcement interactions with transgender persons, and the development of policy for that. The Sheriff's Department is moving forward with their own internal departmental policy that has to do with road patrol, and we'll continue to have that conversation and support policy for the correction side as well. They are seeking input from community members, from employees. They're going about it in a very methodical way and getting input so that they can have the best and policy that everyone can buy into and support and enact as it should be. So we're very excited about that. It's a great step in the right direction and might inform what we do as a county as a whole in terms of that policy development as well. And we'll continue to have more conversations. We are very thankful to the county administration. Big thanks to Lisa for sitting down with all these policies. Bless your heart, Lisa. Lisa took a look at our diversity and inclusion policy. It's one of the things that county administrator and us as WAC identified that needed some upgrading and some changes. Lisa worked hard and with some input from WDIC members made some suggested changes, and so you should be hearing about that. I think it might have already gone out because I think I saw that for input and for review and adoption. One of the things I want to point out, just because I remember it well,
is one of the suggestions was to administer a climate survey every 3 to 5 years as opposed to the hard 3 years, which would give us enough time to sort of implement the things that come out from the climate survey before we start putting another one, so employees actually get to see and be engaged in these changes happening before another survey is dumped on you. Now, that does not negate the opportunities that if there are departments that are struggling and there are things happening, that we may not do just a departmental sort of pulse on the department, seeing what's going on and what needs to help for what needs to change to help with the climate within a specific department, but not the whole county-wide one. So we're looking at that as an area for change. So thank you, County Administration, for the work on that. We also reviewed the proposed flat policy and had some good suggestions for it. One of the things that we heard from administration by way of facilities is the difficulty that it poses, and in some respects it's time consuming to mount, am I saying the right word, flags on all of our buildings that have flagpoles. Sometimes it takes, you know, upwards of 3 hours to do that, and some of them are in fairly precarious positions. We certainly do not want to put anybody in that position, although our employees are trained and know how to protect themselves. So we identify that what we'd like to see, and this is our suggestion coming out of WDIC, and I would dare to say a strong suggestion, is that we consider the social services, our Department of Social Services, which is a very prominent downtown location, at the jail, the public safety facility, and here, and here. We also, however, want to make sure that the other facilities that carry flat poles might find or will find a way to display those flags. The library, for example, which is a difficult one to get to, that little flat pole, might consider, and we want to make sure administration can encourage them, to hang a flag in the big window. They have those big windows that face out onto Green Street. And similarly, the health department, to be able to do that as well, so that, because both of those places have lots of consumers and clients and guests who go there, and who would feel that sense of welcome and identity walking in and being able to see that, those flags being displayed during the designated months. And so we want to make sure that that's encouraged and that it does happen in those areas as well. So our suggestions are there and they'll be coming back out. I think it comes to GO. If it hadn't come to GEO yet, I'm not sure, but I do believe that's where it goes next. Sort of just look at what are some of the suggestions we came up with. It wasn't much. It wasn't much at all. We liked what was presented to us. And then we had a discussion about our goals. And finalizing our goals, I mean, we already had draft goals since our February meeting or January meeting, I don't remember. And we were just finalizing what will be our goals for 2019. There are some announcements I want to share, and maybe Annie already shared before I came in, about Pride Picnic. You did that? Okay. And the Living Wage Study, it's that time again. It's 2 years already when our local living wage numbers may go up. And so Friday, May 3rd, 10 to 12, had alternatives, I believe. Federal Credit Union will be the presentation about the 2019 Living Wage Study, if you're able to attend.
I think it's at the space.
Is it at the space? You think so?
What time?
10 to 12.
10 to 12. Don't quote me on the space. I know it's Friday, May 3rd, from 10 to 12. Otherwise, I don't think there was anything else. Oh, no. I will say we did talk about the reading and discussion program, which I think is extremely important and has been very, very valuable to our employees. And we want to figure out a way to institutionalize that program so that every year we're not scrambling to see who is going to step up to help coordinate and make it happen in the spring and in the fall. We have applied in the past for grants from New York State, humanities grants, that there's a whole program around this, and so they fund that. We've applied for grants through the Community Foundation. They've also helped fund that. And so we want to make sure that we put a good foundation in place for it. When Paula Younger left, and I'll be, you know, would certainly give her kudos, she left an entire blueprint on how to do this program, how to roll it out, everything, soup to nuts, for it. So thank you, Paula. So we're going to be working on that. My bold suggestion was at our Office of Human Rights that do education and outreach, that might be the place for it to live. Although Dr. Clark chuckled at me and gave me the eye. But we'll continue to talk about that one because it's extremely important and valuable tool for talking about diversity and inclusion and actually developing some skill sets on how to manage diversity and inclusion within county employment. And if I missed anything, those of you who were there and awake and engaged in the robust conversation, please add.
All right. Thank you very much, Leslie. Annie?
I would just like to add a little bit about the flag. I would like us to also consider some other buildings, such as facilities such as the airport, health department, and the highway departments.
All right, that's certainly going to be discussed in GO, so, right? Okay. Anything else?
Martha, I will. Forgive me. In 2005, I believe it is, might have been the very year that Workforce Diversity and Inclusion, or the year after, we convened as a committee. The county gave out its first, recommended by WIC, Strengthen Diversity Award for an employee who is going above and beyond in fostering, promoting, and enhancing diversity and inclusion actions within the county. We are revisiting that initiative because we'd like to see it happen and happen well. So that's one of the things that's on our goals list to work on, and you'll hear more about it. And that's it for real.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that report. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
So I'll move J first to get that off our plate. That's the appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, administrative coordinator, and that's Workforce Development Board. And that is ID 8486.
Seconded by Deborah. This discussion on this? Okay, it's a short form roll call.
Ms. Dawson?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous.
Thank you. So I just wanted to explain briefly, I've got some notes from the planning department that's asked me to give you some input about why I pulled resolution I. Some of you already know this. It's as convoluted as anything that I think we've tried to do, and pieces keep getting added. But essentially, the planning department, as everybody knows, has been trying to save for the county the funding that we have been required by the state to return to the state for CDBG funding that we had for loan programs. So that had funding. There's basically two buckets of funding in that, under that umbrella. And one bucket of funding is the money that is in existing loans right now, that will be coming back when monthly payments come in, but also houses are sold, and that could take decades. So that's one bucket of funding. And the planning department had a third party evaluate the value of that bucket, and that was about $386,000. Then there's another bucket, which is funding that has come in from sales and loans. So we already knew that the $386,000 from that first bucket was intended because of an incredible amount of work from the planning department staff, in particular Megan McDonald, to find a project outside of the city, because the city is a CDBG entitlement community, so it couldn't be in the city, in the county, that qualified for a community development block grant. And one of the things that's important to note is that that is not just housing. That is economic development that benefits populations of low and moderate income, and the state classifies within that people with disabilities. So she was able to find the project at the airport, which is the additions of the ADA compliance components of the airport. The other component of that, which is the bucket, the money that we had in hand, the planning department was working with INHS to try giving them as much time as possible. In the meantime, INHS has been trying to find homes to invest that money in. So we have been basically sitting on a resolution, waiting till the last minute, hoping that INHS would successfully spend down that money. Due to an incredible amount of work by INHS and Planning Department requested that I make that very clear to everybody. Houses do not sell very often in the middle of winter, certainly on the holidays. They managed to do that for another just under $400,000. All of that money was successfully spent down, and I think the last amount was spent down days before the HED meeting. So the reason that this was pulled from HED is because we no longer need it, because that money was put into affordable housing projects, which is what we wanted it for anyway, because that's where our focus is. And the other reason why we are very interested in selling the portfolio specifically to INHS is because that ensures that that money then goes into projects, again, for low-income and moderate-income housing development. So I think in a nutshell that should cover why this resolution was pulled. I don't know if anybody has any questions before I do a couple more.
Any questions? All right, thank you.
So I have one resolution I didn't remember, but thank you, Glenn. Resolution D was pulled from the agenda.
I just did abstain from the vote because I work in marketing, and I'm going to try for some of that money, and that's why.
So that's Spring 2019 Tourism Marketing and Advertising Grant Award, ID 8504.
All right, you're moving that. Seconded by Deborah. Okay. And Mike, you've asked to be recused from that because of your job. Was there a question over there, Leslie? Okay.
Which one it was, because I would have recused myself, but you all have already voted and I was not present.
Right, okay. All right. All right. Any discussion of that one, of D? All right. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
One abstention.
I'm sorry.
So just to end my report, there was a presentation by the CVB, their annual presentation. And one of the components of it was a presentation of the Visitor Journey A to D Tourism Training Program. And that is a program to train first-line employees downtown to help them engage in a more welcoming way with tourists, visitors that come to the downtown area. And they gave us a demonstration of that presentation or of that training, and gave a gentle nudge for all of us to take the training ourselves so that we understand it. So for anybody who wants to take that training and get a sense of what all the employees in the county, not necessarily county employees, are being encouraged to go through for businesses, please do get in touch with the CVB. And the last thing that I wanted to point out is that I put in the mailbox of all of the committee members, but I also have a couple extra on top of the mailboxes. This is from the AARP. It says, Making Room, Housing for a Changing America. We are finding in all the research that the generations that are retiring don't necessarily want to go into centralized homes as previous generations have in the past. And so it outlines some of the creative housing solutions that are appealing to some of the senior members of the community in parts or that they have found in their research throughout the country that I thought would be creative suggestions for all of us to review. So there are a couple extra copies, and it is on top of the mailbox for anybody who wants to review it. And the next meeting, I think, is April 25th, if I remember correctly. It's Thursday, if someone can confirm. I had it written somewhere, on some piece of paper somewhere. But I think it is in the morning at 9:30 on Thursday, March or April 25th. President. Yes, that is the case.
All right. Thank you, Anna. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Henry Granison, Vice Chair.
Yes, I'd like to move the first resolution, resolution document number 8461. 2019 reappropriation, the contingent fund for Raise the Age Consulting Services.
Seconded by Anna. Discussion? All right, it's a short form roll call.
Ms. Dawson?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
Okay. I can move to the next resolution, document ID 8434. Appropriations from Contingent Fund, Terminal Pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion? All in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, short form roll call, sorry.
Ms. Dawson?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you.
And for the committee, we met on March 19th. We had Marie Boyer give us a presentation on the reentry numbers that she worked out with Dave Sanders. The amazing thing is we have Dave Sanders do a presentation on the ATIs, and he was limited to 25 slides. And he actually was able to get it done in 25 slides. And so he did it on the ATIs. And so that was it. We next meet on April 21st.
All right. 25 is a lot. Okay.
Yeah, so it was down from 100.
Down from 100.
Oh,
the 21st,
okay.
I have the 18th.
Okay.
Public safety?
What's the date?
18th.
The 18th?
Okay, yeah, I guess it is the 18th. I'm sorry.
21st is a Sunday.
18th.
All right, any other questions for Henry? All right, thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
We have not had a meeting since our last legislature meeting. Our upcoming meeting is this Friday, April 5th. At 9 a.m. here in the legislature, Kate Kephart will be here to discuss the ODA housing, and she will have a presentation, and I believe we have one resolution that we'll be voting on.
On? You mean on Friday?
On Friday.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Any questions for Shauna? All right. Thank you. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. Steph and I met on the March 21st, and I was not present at the meeting, so for a description of the meeting, we'll defer to Ann Corman, the vice chair, but I will move the resolution and appropriation from contingent fund, dedicatory plaques, and signage for county buildings, ID 8480. I so move.
Second by Mike Lane. Discussion? Dan.
Yeah, I was at that meeting, so I should know this, or maybe it didn't happen, or just some discussion about the sign for this building and where it's going to go, and we're going to see a final version before it gets installed.
Yeah, I can answer that.
Thank you.
So I So that's been brought up by a couple of folks, and I just asked Arell about that, and he said that he's Holt Architecture, which is working on those, is pretty busy with some other things right now for the Tioga Street property. So they're going to bring the sign templates to us for approval. So, but it's just a little delayed.
Thank you.
Why is the $400 going to the county administration for the poet laureate plaque?
For the what plaque?
For the poet laureate.
That's just where it's charged out of.
Just where it's charged out of?
Yeah. That's just where it's charged out of.
Okay. Yeah. And where did you, I know you probably weren't required to get bids on these, but all these prices basically from our facilities group?
Yes.
Jason said yes.
Yeah, I mean, Arell and Lisa worked on getting quotes for these. Or they're getting estimates for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Some of this, so this would all be compliant with the purchasing manual and the thresholds in the purchasing manual. So I don't know the details as to what's a competitive, what they got quotes on and vice versa, how they'll go about it. But these are all estimates they probably got working with Holt.
I can hear that.
I said they probably worked with Holt to get the average cost of these types of projects.
And the plaques themselves that are going inside the buildings, they're going to be similar to the old jailhouse one just inside the door. That's an older one. But a newer one, if you're up at EMS, they have a newer type, and it's just inside.
So that's not directional signage. That's
the
describing plaque. Who worked on the project, the architect,
right.
That
right,
kind of
the
stuff.
Plaques versus right. The signage.
So additional signage for legislature at Daniel D. Tompkins Building, that's directional signs and identifying the building.
Right.
Right. I think that's where the greatest concern is like, you can put up a sign, but if it's in the wrong place or if it's, if it's not really clear, you'll have spent money and it's counterproductive. So I think there's a lot of interest in legislator input on this. Not to micromanage, just that we really, I explain to people how to find this building at least twice a week, and it's hard. So we can make it easier.
So details, I talked to Arell about all this just today. And so details, his ideas will be forthcoming. And then I told him that people are wanting input, the legislators. So we'll bring the information as soon as we get it.
Well,
get people's input.
Well, can we wait?
Henry, I'll recognize Henry. Yeah, go ahead.
Can we wait until we get the details before we pass this?
No. We're approving the money.
This is the money to...
Right, right. Why,
so
are, we appro- why are we approving the money before we know what designs we're getting?
I think they have reasonable estimates.
There was a design shared at F&I of these of what these would be and what they would look like. So, I mean, there was pictures in the agenda packets that identified what the interior plaques would look like and what the exterior signs would look like. Arell gave a presentation, right? Was it a presentation?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
He gave a presentation at the meeting before last, possibly.
Oh, so I wasn't at that one.
Yeah.
I missed that one.
So the presentation was given as to what they would look like, size, those types of things.
And
so
there was still some question on exactly where the signs might be placed. he had it set up so that he could either put them on the wall or put them on posts. For the directional signs, but it wasn't finalized by any stretches which way was going to go.
What we can do is we can get final sketches or conceptual drawings or pictures of what they look like before we go out and get them made and make sure to run it by F&I.
I think all legislators would like input. Is there, these numbers are generous enough to cover if there are tweaks to, and I think the directional signs are really the issue. These are generous enough to cover. Okay. I think we should go ahead and vote on this so that they can move forward. and with confidence that we will get an opportunity to review, especially the directional signs. But the copy for all of them is would be relatively easy to share as well. That seemed fair? Okay. Anything else on this?
As far as I just looked up the last. Okay, so it was in the agenda packet. So I guess we could look it up for February, and there was pictures in there. Mm-hmm. So the only other big thing at the last meeting was a presentation, you know, by Jason and Holt Architect about what you already got today. And as far as the Department of Recycling and Materials Management Waste, as they're having to increase some costs and they're having overall cost increases. They said right now they're able to manage, but, you know, they're having a hard time because of different issues with recycling and costs going up. So they'll keep us updated on that.
Thank you. Any questions? Other questions?
Yeah, we should know.
On the Underground Railroad, is Carol Kamen working on that?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Terrific. And make sure Leslin and WDSC takes a look at that.
At least.
Okay. All right, great. All right, ready to vote on Resolution N. Anna?
No,
oh, it's a short form roll call.
Ms. Dawson?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Are there any no's? Henry is a no. Anything else? Okay. So yes is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 to 1. That passes. All right. Thank you, Annie. That is the last committee report. Can I get a motion on the minutes of March 19th, 2019? Moved by Leslin, seconded by Shauna. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? The minutes are passed. All right. I will ask for an executive session to discuss real estate negotiations. Can I get a motion on that? Moved by Mike Lane, seconded by Deborah. We'll do them separately. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right. 5-minute recess to shut down the cameras. And I do not expect to take action after we come out of either of the executive sessions. So we'll shut down the cameras and come back in 5 minutes. Thank you.